It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy's here. Renee's here. Alex is here. The whole gang is here. We're going to talk about new features in iOS 16 and Mac OS Ventura. It's the end of the system preference pane, but the return of the dog cow. All coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 823, recorded Tuesday, June 21st, 2022. Mac and cheese. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Nuvei. Say goodbye to abandoned carts, poor approval rates, and high chargebacks with Nuvei, the platform fast-forwarding to the next generation of payments. Turn payments into powerful accelerators for your business at Nuvei.com. And by IT Pro TV. Finally, you can enjoy getting an IT education with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/MacBreak for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription when you use the code MacBreak30 at checkout. And by ZocDoc. In the chaotic world of healthcare, let ZocDoc be your trusted guide to find a quality doctor in a way that's surprisingly pain-free. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Start your search for a top-rated doctor, many available within 24 hours. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie has rebooted everything. That's a good epitaph. I tried.
I started with Earth, then I did the moon. I've been rebooting cosmology as I go along, Leo, to starting fresh. Everyone deserves it.
I hope it all works well. Renee's at youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. And you are working hard to make yourself a successful YouTube host, which you are.
I'm trying. Picking up all the lessons that you can teach me, Leo. I've been studying for years.
I saw your tweet thread about, I guess you tweeted, there's an Indian YouTuber who has something like 22 yeah. million subscribers who's declining rapidly. And it really just shows you can't stop working, Renee. You just can't.
No. But also, you've known this for years. Like, he built a lot of his audience based on constant giveaways. So the audience was there for giveaways and not for him. And that's very hard to sustain.
I have always abjured giveaways. And the people come to us all the time saying, well, you do giveaways. And I say, that's called free ads, and we don't do it.
Yes.
But also, I don't want to buy the audience. Hey, I hear a little shorter. It must be the cheeseball-powered Andy Anatko from WGBH in Boston. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing just spiffy. And Renee, that is a really good suggestion. Like, maybe, God forbid that we lose you on this earthly plane before, like, YouTube becomes a forgettable thing. But I think it'd be really, really awesome if, like, you know that message that sort of flashes on the stream, like when it says that experiencing interruptions, here's reasons why. That'd be a perfect thing for, and then have like a little button that just basically never moves on your headstone.
Experiencing interruptions because dead.
Yes. Went 404 on the life server.
DED dead. Yeah.
Also, of course, from officehours.global and 090.media, the inimitable Alex Lindsay. Good to see you, Alex.
Good to be here. I was thinking, you know, reboot could be the new word for reincarnation.
I'm rebooting.
Oh, you know, nice. Like, you know,
like, reboot.
Alex, stay inside today. It's going to be 38 degrees and the sun is shining.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, that's right. We're imperialist here. It's 101 yes. degrees is our expected high today.
Did you see that thing yesterday, that meme yesterday, Leo, where this, I think she was a newscaster in France, and she wanted to scare people by showing them what the 2050 weather would be like. And this was back in 2015, and everyone was aghast by how hot it was going to get. And that turns out to be the weather yesterday.
Yeah.
It's not 2050.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
We're hot, man.
Andy, I just want to show you something. These are snack clips, a.k.a. conjoined chopsticks, designed. Remember last week, Andy was using regular everyday chopsticks to eat his Planters cheese balls.
Fat stack of cheddar.
But these, look, they go on your fingers like this so that you can continue to type.
I don't think.
And
how much like green do you want them to look, Leo? Leo, how much like Wolverine do you want Andy to look? I mean, really.
He's ready to
chop sets of him in the claws.
Planters, cheese balls.
Yeah,
I'm not saving this lid. It's going, man. It's going. Yeah, yeah. Watch this. Watch this. Oh, my God. Cheesy ball goodness. Clean fingers. But wait,
welcome
there's more.
To the 21st century.
Each of those is 13 seconds of your life, Leo.
Because. Oh, yeah, I know. I know. I'm heading toward the reboot. One planter's cheese ball. Is
perfect.
Not enough.
Got them for everybody.
I brought them for everybody. I had to buy. Apparently, you can't just buy one on Amazon. So I had to buy. Here comes some snack clippers.
Just throw.
Go ahead.
Just throw.
Go ahead. Snack clip away because you know what? They're sanitary. How do you have these too, huh? Everybody apparently in the studio has snack clips. Just me and you?
When Andy puts them on, it says snicked.
But wait, there's more. Apparently, why start with a little tiny can of cheese balls when the fine folks at Oots make a giant barrel of cheese balls?
Cheese boulders.
Look at that, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, you see, I get concerned out of any container of snacks that's large enough to get my head stuck in. That would be a very awkward conversation at my memorial service.
Yeah, exactly. But boy, you know, it works just great with these.
So let us know if it's better. Is it as good or better? What's the comparison?
Okay, that's an interesting comparison. I might have to try again. First of all,
does it have an earthy bouquet?
These cheese balls are larger, the planters, but they're also crunchier. And these Utz cheese balls are smaller, but they melt in your mouth. All right,
don't size shame the cheese balls.
We're also offering a 2-hour for subscribers to the on the this on is, subscribers this is the, to the special one.
Yeah,
we're also
Twit
offering 2 hours for ASMR. ASMR.
Can you hear the crunch? Does that actually?
Yeah, this is
Club
yes.
Twit. Leo eats cheese balls.
This is the new show, Mac and Cheese.
Nice.
I can double fist the. Whoa. Okay. Wait a minute.
I hope Lisa's copywriting that.
One got away.
Yeah, exactly.
I could double. Here's the cheese ball spoon.
You got to get him. You got to get him a shovel, a trowel.
You don't want to short circuit the advantage of the chopsticks. The chopsticks force you to slow down.
Funnel. You need a funnel and a
at what
trowel.
Point do you give up and start stabbing the cheese balls with the chopsticks?
Are you suggesting a cheese ball bong, Alex?
A cheese bomb.
I love it.
He's mainlining cheese.
I love it.
Stacks of cheddar.
All right. Enough frivolity. Let's do a show. But I just wanted to show you that there has been parody in the cheese ball wars. Well, actually, Anthony Nielsen had these apparently all along.
An escalation in the cheese ball wars, Leo.
Escalation?
On East Coast, West Coast beefs and hip hop, it turns into warfare. In geekdom, it just becomes, hey, how about instead of chopsticks, we have some sort of a mass market entrepreneur device that can be used to be manufactured overseas? Okay.
How much do you think Apple charges for licensing the Lightning jack on third party cables? I've seen estimates of as much as $3 to $4 per cable. Does that seem reasonable?
I was going to say more.
You think it's more? Okay.
Because it's a chipset, so
it's not just a thing. It's
you get a chip.
Yeah, well, that might explain why they're reluctant to give up the Lightning. Although they've given up everywhere except the iPhone, and I guess some lower end iPads. There's an iPad. Nothing.
Those are going too. Those are going away.
Those are going C2. Well, yeah. The EU, of course, is moving to a universal standard USB-C, and now. Three U.S. senators have called for the Department of Commerce to adopt the common charger standard. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Ed Markey wrote an open letter to Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, urging the United States follow suit with the EU. I think Apple's ready for this.
Finsta. And eliminate.
I think it looks good for them because Apple's. You know, it's good to say anyway. We asked for something and then it happened. You know, and we put the pressure on it because Apple's already going this way.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, I think that I get concerned about our representatives and this is in the EU or the United States, micromanaging technology because they are digital children. It's like a 12-year-old doing open heart surgery. Like they're like making like I'm going to tell you exactly how to do something that I don't know anything about. like they don't know anything about this. I mean, those three definitely don't know anything about this. And so the thing is that I think that it worries me that we've now taken the crazy EU view of let's take a 10-year-old technology that barely works and make it a standard. Like, it's just stupid.
I have a guess that if Apple had if Apple had everything in a row, if they weren't so damn secretive all the time, they would have actually preferred to ship USB-C last year with the ProRes, because it makes zero sense to have a ProRes chip and a ProRes storage controller. And so that to me is just, there was COVID and nothing was lined up and they just couldn't get it done in time. And they're working to get it done because the amount of money that they make from MFI, it's not nothing, but like for Apple, it's nothing. Like, it is such a small, tiny amount. The control was great because while everybody was worried in the early years of USB-C, they got Lightning out 2 years before USB-C, and there were zero quality control issues and zero confusion about compatibility. Anybody could just plug in any Lightning cable and it worked. It was way better for its time. That time is blissfully over, and I think they were going to transition regardless of the EU
this,
or the DOJ.
This EU law in the US, if they do it, would be by 2024, long after Apple's already abandoned Lightning.
I'm sure.
Andy, I can see you wanted to say something.
No, well, a bit of trivia. You notice that all four of the people involved in that communication, Sanders, Markey, Warren, and the Secretary of Commerce, are all New Englanders, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Vermont. Interesting. So basically, they're probably already in their other old Rolodexes. I think that it's a move that Apple should be making anyway. Only because obviously, if they were big fans of Lightning, we would have seen MacBooks with Lightning ports on them. We never did. So that's basically shows where the writing on the wall was. But the only thing that kind of concerns me about it is that I did read the letter. And the thing is, the language that they used was not really precise, saying that, well, we do have a charging standard and it has revolutionized all devices, where it really is the USB standard. What they're talking about is they want a standard connector, not a standard charger. When you go through your library of phones that dates past 5 or 6 years, you do see a whole bunch of proprietary connectors and proprietary chargers. That's the really big kind of e-waste that was just triumphant 10 years ago, not so much right now. I do think that if and when Apple switches to USB-C, it'll reduce the problem of having all of these like knockoff Lightning connectors that you buy at the drugstore, that you buy like at the dollar store. Of course, they don't have the MFI logo on them, so God knows where they come from, God knows how they're made. Whereas USB-C, you can't knock them off because there is no way, because they weren't valuable enough to be made overly complicated to begin with. So it's a good thing if it makes people happy, that's fine. I don't think it'll lead to any big problems in the future, because God forbid that there's going to be, nobody can see another connector that follows USB-C. The next connector that follows USB-C is going to be nothing. No chargers, no connectors, just contactless everything.
And by the way, does Apple get out of this if they eliminate connectors?
Yeah, they do.
So that this, if there's no connector, then you're not in violation?
Yeah.
By the way, this looks like an ad for cheese balls. I'm going to have to put the cheese balls away.
No.
If they do a proprietary charger, they have the same. Get
a bidding war between Oots and Planters for sponsorship. I'm sorry.
Who wants to be on the set at all times?
Dependent on them maintaining the cheese standard. If they deviate from the cheese standard and make a proprietary like Apple Watch, they could run into problems. But as long as they're backwards compatible with cheese, it's fine.
And again, I don't have any. I want a new format because the Lightning is old and it's now become the thing that the one other cable that I have to do because I have so many USB-Cs. Yeah. It's mostly
they
that
never updated
just,
it.
The USB-C standard, it just isn't very good. You know, like, and so to make it a standard, it's not like this is, I mean, it's you pick up a cable and you have no idea whether it can actually transfer data or not. You know, and
that's
and
a cable problem. That's a connector problem, not a device problem.
But I'm just saying that we're saying
if you got good cables, it would work with everything.
Sure, but the average
I just bought all Thunderbolt. I gave up. Spent a fortune.
Yeah, I mean, I just, well, yeah. Oh, no, Renee, it gets worse though. I would buy all Thunderbolt except that certain devices don't work very well with Thunderbolt. They have to have USB-C. Oh, so it's I get Thunderbolt 4. I have lots of those.
Is a USB-C video standard that requires not a Thunderbolt cable, but a USB video. Which is ridiculous. Lisa has one of those monitors.
It's not very standardized for a standard, is it?
No.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Well, on the other hand, though, it is good for consumers that we don't have a myriad of incompatible proprietary chargers. It's really
transformed. Which happened without the government. Like without any legislation, that just happened because we got tired because people got tired of having those.
Yeah, maybe
Didn't require any legislation.
Yeah,
like Apple's going to leave Lightning because it's too slow. Like it's not going to, they're not going to leave because I think what's going to happen is the pro versions will all have Lightning or have USB-C and the base versions will have nothing. You know, they'll just be like, I think that's where Apple's going to go with it because it's just cheaper.
But my question is, this is part of the complication of any sort of discussion like this. There's the connector, there's the cable, there's the standard. Yep. It's what you put across the cable, then there's what you do with the connector. I don't know how you would fix the myriad problems with things that look like USB-C cables without saying, well, now we're going to put like a notch on this cable will create this. And now you're back to the problems of, do I have a micro USB? Do I have a SCART cable? Do I have a...
I don't think they should do anything about it. I'm just saying that this isn't something that the government should do because it's very complicated and very gray, and there's a whole bunch of things that are there. And once you start pulling at that thread, it just becomes, a mess. The thing is that the market has decided. It's a big mess. It's fine. Like it is what it is. I'm just saying that them sticking their head into it is just, it's again, they're technological children. Like they really are. Like I've had a lot of interactions with the folks that are there.
I get that. So, the good thing about the EU law and if a proposed US law is based on it is that it doesn't say all devices. It really is just here are two or three specific classes of devices that we want to have a unified connector for. So it's not so if someone comes up with an 8K video camera for which no, we actually need a hexagonal. We need like a Chinese, we need like a throwing star shaped connector that basically like the blade in Crawl where you put it in and these six other connectors sort of shink out in a star pattern inside the device. You'll still be able to do that, but you won't be able to simply say, hey, we just thought it would be funny to have a banana shaped charging connector on our new Apple phone just to be jerks about it and flaunt the fact that you can't do anything to stop us.
This also doesn't mean that MagSafe is gone on laptops. I mean, you can do MagSafe and USB-C charging. All the Apple laptops with MagSafe do that. So you can have something better. You wouldn't do it on a phone just because of space considerations.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think the lower end phones will end up just being some kind of MagSafe. Just set it down on things, and that's just the way it's designed. Like your watch.
We've heard all these rumors. Yeah, your watch
is
that way.
Which I hate, by the way. I mean, I desperately want a connector for my watch because I knock it off my thing all the time.
It's magnetic. How can you knock it off? They made it. It was going.
Oh my gosh.
Just so you wouldn't knock it off. Knocking it off.
That new Nomad charger.
Super glue.
We have Nomad's going to be a sponsor, so we have a bunch of Nomad stuff. I set Lisa up with the base station that does the watch and the phone, and it snacks on there, and you're not going nowhere. It is niche. And I use that.
On there like Mac Break on cheese balls.
Yeah, exactly. I use the little...
show title.
The little rubber Macintosh that you put the watch in, and it's a nice solid connection.
I have that. I have it right here.
You can't go wrong with that. Yeah, I love that.
So cute.
You put the little charging puck in there.
Do you punch things in your sleep, Alex? Is that too personal?
I do not.
Why do you ask that?
Because he's locking it off a really hard magnetic charger.
No, I don't charge it. If you charge it when you're sleeping, you don't get sleeping data.
Good point.
I'm a data guy.
Yeah.
So charge it when...
Yes.
Knock it off.
Yeah. I usually charge when I'm in Mac break or in office hours.
Charge during Mac break. Everybody should do that. It's an excuse to watch Mac break. And when the show's over, your watch is full. I love that idea.
You shouldn't need time for Mac break anyway.
Like we're not gonna,
you don't need, we don't want you to know what time it is.
We don't want to know when we start.
You don't want to know how long the show is.
Like casinos. We don't want to just keep them at the window. Just keep them listening.
Apple workers at the Towson, Maryland store vote to unionize the first Apple store in the U.S. The Domino's perhaps are beginning to fall. It happened at Starbucks, one store, then another, then another, then another. We'll see. It hasn't happened yet at Amazon warehouses. Amazon and Apple both fighting tooth and nails not to unionize. President Biden congratulated the Apple workers. He said he's proud, proud of them for voting in a union.
There you go.
And then, like President Bartlett, it came to a sudden bicyclicular stop.
He did, just like Bartlett. That was the beginning of The West Wing, was the very first episode. You're right.
He a sudden arboreal stop.
A sudden arboreal stop. I forgot about that.
Well, at least that president could have gotten on the bike in the first place, not like some presidents.
You never saw Donald Trump ride a bike, did you? Did you? Or Taft. Taft couldn't get on a bike.
There you go.
Warren G. Harding never rode a bike.
Reagan had a Harley, right?
Yeah, he had a Harley.
But Reagan had a Harley.
But yeah, it is good news. It doesn't mean that there is a magic wand and now suddenly even that shop is unionized. Now it starts a process by which Apple and this union now have to meet to hammer out a contract. Now we find out exactly how anti-union Apple is or isn't. Like you kind of expect Apple to do the sort of things that they did or they have been doing and they're alleged to have done to have convinced the Atlanta store to not even to cancel their vote. But that's sort of like fair game so far. Next, what they could do if they really, really want to put their shoulders into it is basically stretch out these negotiations for a year, claim that the negotiations went to nothing
because of the union.
Right.
Like all the media companies did.
Mm-hmm. Right. They could even say that in the intervening year, we're convinced that the 2-to-1 margin of votes in favor of the union are now no longer a plurality. And now a majority of workers at that store now do not want to form a union. Or they could just simply say that these people have been negotiating in bad faith. These are not the right people for us to be negotiating with. So they could really draw this out for a couple of years if they want to. Or if they decide to simply make this into a linear process where they try to hammer out the best agreement they possibly can with this union, then we'll find out that no, they're not, you know, they aren't the 2022 version of the coal company that hires the Pinkerton men to shoot at striking workers blocking access to the pits.
Microsoft said it's going to try collaborating with unions to avoid public disputes. They didn't go quite so far as to embrace unions, but Brad Smith said they're committed to working with employees if they choose to unionize. This is in contrast to what Apple, Starbucks, and Amazon have been doing. It's good that the union is called CORE.
It's Apple Core.
Apple Core. Get it? Apple Core.
Like every third Apple user group in the early
80s. Yeah, that's true. They were all
80s.
Apple Cores, weren't they? The Coalition of Organized Retail Employees, which will be part of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. It's a big 300,000 strong industrial union. It'll be interesting to see what happens. 2-to-1, though, pretty strong margin, despite videos from Deirdre O'Brien saying, "We're family. We're family. Why would you want to do this to the family?"
Yeah. Supposedly, the workers at the Atlanta store have been sort of commiserating. So supposedly workers at the Atlanta store who basically lost in that attempt have been sort of coaching other Apple stores saying, here's the tricks they pulled on us. Here's how maybe you should try to not make that quite so effective if they try it again on you. There's still NLRB has an open investigation about Apple interfering in very, very simple ways, not like really, really heinous ways with the vote. I think in Maryland it could be the Atlanta one, but basic things like, hey, you're not supposed to pull one person aside and try to browbeat them into convincing them not to vote a certain way. You can't punish somebody for hanging up a union notice meeting, a union notice like in a worker only space on their free time. Little things like that. So there's still things that are kind of in the mix on that. So
we'll see what happens. The employees at the Grand Central Terminal store in New York and the Louisville, Kentucky Apple store also are organizing. They're going to wait to ask for an election until they feel like they have a strong support. Atlanta says they're going to try to revive that election in the future. But it often is the case that when one store goes, it becomes a domino. I think that's what happened with Starbucks. Now there's 150 Starbucks stores that have unionized
like,
and more all the
it's
time.
It's like Canada. You can call the election when you think you're going to win. I love it.
Who is it? Is it England that's had somebody's having their fifth election in 3 years? Who is it?
France. Marco.
France. That's right.
Oh, jeez. Oh, no. Israel.
Well, Israel.
Oh, Israel. That's who it is. Israel.
But Israel and Italy have always been doing that. They've never
like, well, there's so many different parties. Do that again.
Let's try this. We didn't like that. Let's do it again.
One more time.
Let's do it one more time.
A series of collapsing coalitions.
Coalition.
In Italy. Yeah.
You know what's collapsing is your internet, by the way.
Yeah.
Are you
Shaw?
Did
I reboot again?
No, it's not that.
I'm Videotron.
Videotron, that's right. That's the great Francophone cable company.
Yeah. Hydro-powered internet.
Yeah, and I think maybe you're running out of water like the rest of us. I don't know.
More hamsters, more wheels.
Don't invade. Pausing. We have no water. Don't invade.
It's pausing briefly, yeah. All right, let's talk about the future. I think the future will involve fewer CAPTCHAs, which I think is a great thing. iOS 16. Now, I presume you've played with this, Renee, but and I guess you have to. The sites have to go along with it. But Apple has a switch now in iOS 16 under advanced automatic verification, bypass CAPTCHAs in apps and on the web by allowing iCloud to automatically and privately verify your device and account. CAPTCHAs are second only to the cookie warning in Internet Annoyances. But I think Google wants
these
CAPTCHAs.
They train AI for free. Yeah. They train their AI systems for free.
Google isn't, and by the way, Steve Gibson years ago demonstrated how CAPTCHAs are completely ineffective in blocking bots. There are a number of, for instance, porn sites with millions of visitors a day that take the capture from the site they're trying to get into, put it on the porn site, a human solves it, and then they go, hey, the answer is.
Yeah. Also, sometimes humans can't solve it. Like, I can't find another traffic light. Leave me alone. I just cannot find another traffic light.
Is a motorcycle a bicycle? Is it a moped? Is a bicycle? Is a bicycle a bicycle? I don't know what. I hate
that. Ask me about sandwiches. I can handle sandwiches.
And the thing about traffic lights, does the bar holding the traffic light, is that the traffic light too?
Right?
I don't understand. And why any website?
It's almost like it's a Turing test for humans.
They would torture their customers like this is beyond me. Knock it off.
You can't apply it like the Google one. You have to. It has to be able to put that up. Like it's not like you can say I want to do this and just have someone say something that I'm not a human or I'm a human. Like you think that you can get around it, but it's the way that one works. The Google one at least.
Well, and that's the thing. I think Apple. It's nice for Apple to put that switch there, but these sites have to then say okay. We trust you, Apple. And I'm convinced sites have some ulterior motive for doing this because they're horrible. Why would they do this to us?
Like Google CAPTCHA system. Yeah. It just like verify you and pass along a verify token to the API for the Google CAPTCHA system. That's my hope.
Mm. Yeah. Well, to answer your question, answer your observation, oftentimes a system will use it basically to punish you for using VPNs or other techniques that will prevent them from tracking you. Where that's when all of a sudden you have to go through eight different recaptchas, and then they say, well, we don't recognize this IP address, and so therefore we've sent a one-time password code to your email address, and then we're gonna have to log all the way back in. This is why like Facebook has such a hard time with almost anybody who tries to undermine them.
The good news is Fastly and Cloudflare, two very popular CDNs, have both said they will support this standard. Yeah. So if a company is using either one of these and the capture comes from them, they'll support it.
Well, Cloudflare works. Did you see what happened last time?
Yeah.
Were they down?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yes.
They were down. Who else was down?
They were down. Everybody was down. Like, it was like Google had issues. Discord. It was like a half an hour of chaos. Yeah.
Discord is down. You're all free. Quick, run away.
Here's the headline. I like this from Amanda Yeo and Mashable. Half the internet died where you were sleeping.
Yeah.
Here's what happened. So everybody uses Cloudflare as DDoS protection. The variety of things. Discord, DoorDash, League of Legends. I guess I was asleep. Quite a few.
I have to admit, I have to admit, I was like, this doesn't work. And then I went to sleep.
It's just an excuse to go to bed early.
Yeah,
Crunchyroll, Amazon Web Services, Google Services, NordVPN, Coinbase, Grindr, and Fur Affinity.
Well, there you go.
What those is fur weird. Affinity? I don't know if I should ask.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Leo.
I don't think you want to know.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's an art gallery for all things scaled, feathered, and fluff.
We're not still here don't to do shame. It.
I'm still, still worried.
Just
no,
play
but
safe.
We don't want a community guideline strike either this early yeah. in the show. We usually save those for later in the show.
Okay. It's interesting that Mashable has no links to any of these services except for Affinity. So maybe
it's all fun and games until your eggplant looks like the latest dinosaur in Jurassic Dominion.
So yeah, somebody's calling it a Cloudflare eclipse. I think that's a good way to put it.
Cloudflare rainout.
A lot of games, interestingly. 2K Games, League of Legends, Minecraft, Steam. Wow. Udemy, yeah. Notion was down. Oh, that would have been bad. Valorant. Holy cow.
Yeah. It does kind of tail on to what Alex was saying. Alex said something earlier that I don't automatically think that all people who are lawmakers are idiots, or maybe to the next extension, they don't have advisors who can tell them what's right, what's wrong. But the thing is, the things that get me worried is when you see all of these like proposed laws that kind of make sense about, hey, you have too much power over who sees what. You have to be transparent. You have to make sure that you know, that we know that you're not trying to filter out content. They're always talking about like the name brand companies. They're always talking about Google. They're always talking about Facebook. They're always talking about Apple. They never talk about companies like Cloudflare that have in the past essentially put message boards and websites out of business simply by saying, okay, we will no longer provide you the sort of services that allow you to operate at scale without being totally DDoS'd. And so not that I think that they've ever picked a bad fight. The websites and message boards they've decided to pull out of are eminently not something that any business would want to have anything to do with. But nonetheless, the outages that happened yesterday show you that everybody thinks that they're connecting everything through Google or everything through Verizon or everything through whatever. They're really connecting through Cloudflare and like three other services yeah. that are always like two layers below between you and the keyboard.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Amazon Web Services were also down. So that's a double whammy because everybody else is on Amazon, right?
And I just want to clarify, I don't think that the representatives are idiots. I think that they are technologically inept. You know, like the thing is that Tom Brady is a really great quarterback, but he should not play hockey. You know, like that's all I'm saying.
I get it.
Okay.
Yep. Marky and Warren,
Marky's pretty literate.
Marky particularly, because he's made it his cause celeb to be like one of the point people in the Democratic Party for antitrust and anti-tech, more regulation for tech. I've never spoken to him directly. I have spoken to people who have dealt with his office before, and they've told me that they know what's important, they know what's right, they know how things work, and they know how they know their power to break things by dumbing down a proposal into something that will actually make it illegal to put a JPEG attached to anything on the internet.
He also wrote a book called Chemicals Used in Hydraulic Fracturing. So he's clearly...
Yeah. So he knows a lot about
he knows a lot Marky's about fracking.
Marky is a lifer. He is one of those like guys that if you've lived in New England, you have heard his name associated with local politics and local governance pretty much your entire life. And he's not a dabbler. He didn't just mark up 8 episodes of The Love Boat and based on that fame, launch a successful career in politics. After that, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Warren, too.
All right. Let's take a break. Come back with more. When can I order my gosh darn M2 MacBook Air? That's what I want to know.
Soon.
Coming up.
Soon.
But soon. But first.
Fly, dollars. Fly. Be free.
Yeah, really.
Fly to Cupertino.
Burn a hole in my cheese ball can here. I've been using this for money because no one would ever suspect that I've been storing my dollars in here. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Nuvei, Nuvei, tomorrow's payment platform designed to accelerate
your business. You may say, well, wait a minute. I know these other payment platforms. Nuvei is the latest. It's next generation payment technology. And it's something you want to look into because it not only boosts conversions and reduces fraud and increases approval rates, which means you make more money and it works seamlessly with your existing tech stack. It's a single API integration that connects you to all this goodness. An agile platform your business will use to add new payment methods, to enter more markets, to meet evolving customer demands, to stay ahead of the curve. 550 alternative payment methods, including cryptocurrencies, local payment solutions around the world in 150 currencies, local acquiring in 46 countries, more than 200 global markets. That's Nuvei. And look at the people who use Nuvei: Wix, Valve, DraftKings, General Motors, Valentino, Crypto.com, FTX, and on and on. Nuvei is the way. Customers also benefit from all payout options, card issuing, banking, and fraud management services. See, this is a name you need to know. Nuvei can handle any high-demand peak event, and their always-on approach ensures five nines of uptime, 99.999% uptime. But you don't have to buy the whole package all at once. They offer flexible a la carte solutions, so you get exactly what you need, no more, no less. Future-proof technology and a dedicated team of human support professionals that are there 24/7 every day of the year. Because commerce happens every day of the year. Nuvei prepares your business for whatever comes next. Nuvei. Say goodbye to abandoned carts, poor approval rates, and high chargebacks with Nuvei, the platform fast forwarding to the next generation of payments. Turn payments into powerful accelerators for your business at Nuvei.com. Nuvei.com. Tomorrow's payment platform. We thank Nuvei so much for supporting Mac Break Weekly. Nuvei.com. Some big. We're starting now as people get the betas and they try it. We're starting to learn more and more about Ventura, more and more about iOS 16, iPadOS 16. Michael Tsai, this gets back to your conversation, Renee, about why doesn't Stage Manager work on older iPads. Michael Tsai, who's lately been doing this on his blog, putting together quotes from a variety of people. He's got Matthew Panzerina's quotes with Craig Federighi, which I thought were very straightforward. Thomas Brand, at least Apple could throw three-year-old iPad Pros a bone with minor software updates. Now that this has been out for a couple of weeks and you've heard Apple's response, Renee, I'm sure you've thought more about it. Do you feel like Apple is artificially keeping Stage Manager for the higher-end iPads, or that it is really a technical limitation?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't things, because when they put stuff that's exclusive to higher-end models, people complain they're withholding it so that you're forced to update. And when they push it down to lower-end models, people complain the performance is crappy, and they're trying to force you to upgrade by destroying your experience.
And I don't want them to hold back something, because this is where Apple has always shined compared to Microsoft. Microsoft is so reluctant to do anything that every goddamn PC can't do that it holds them back. And Apple's savage. But I don't think that's a terrible thing.
So
the most damning complaint from Andrew Cunningham, who for years has been the guy at Ars Technica who writes those great pieces about Mac OS. It's not unreasonable, he says, to expect a 14-month-old, $1,000-plus computer to support new OS features. And he says if Apple couldn't do that, they should have designed the feature differently.
See, that's hard, too, because, like, again, last year they got pasted for putting an M1 processor in the iPad and then not doing anything with it. And so this month, this year they're like, okay, we'll do something with it. And then they get pasted for making an M1 exclusive feature. And my understanding is, like, the M1 chip is a Mac chip. Like, it was designed to do a lot of things that A-series chips were just never meant to do. They never had to deal with. So there's a lot of advanced, dedicated silicon IP that's designed around page swapping and memory management and storage control, the storage control, the graphics subsystems, all of that is designed to deal with Mac issues that iPads and iPhones had nothing like nothing they needed for that. So Apple never built it. And Apple's very different from like an Intel or a Qualcomm, where they never know what kind of device like any chip is going to be in. So they have to put everything into every chip, which is why some of those chips are super, super expensive beyond what an individual or specific device needs. And the M1 has a lot of these features that Apple is leaning on. The M1 iPad with the 64 gigabytes is unfortunate because it doesn't have enough storage to do the swap effectively. And that's probably the worst experience you'll get with this. But they just, it's really hard to say, okay, you can't have it on the M1 64, but you can have it on the 2 terabyte A50. Like, that would just be a huge mess. So they drew the line and said, we're building features for M1 iPads. They're not, like, honestly, they're not great features. I think people are upset because they don't have them, which I get. But, like, if they did get them, they may not want them. So the whole thing is a mess. And, like, I don't know what Apple's going to do, because they got in trouble last year for doing nothing, in trouble this year for doing something. And I wish people were, and this is a horrible thing to say, but a lot of this was based off really like bad information in the beginning. There were some quotes that went out that were not accurate. And so people had a lot of expectational debt built up. And then it's the same thing as like the swappable RAM on the studio display, or why they think the graphics processors, like they don't understand how modern silicon works. It's so much more complicated than like the old x86, because they have so many custom IP that is beyond what like just a CPU, GPU. It is so much harder, which is why like my heart breaks that they've defunded Inantec so much, because they would give us really definitive answers on all this, but they have like 1.5 employees left, and I'm upset about that.
Yeah,
so I'm
ranting
a bit.
Yeah.
But this is like this is a, my understanding is that the silicon checks out on this, and you don't put Craig Federighi up on the record twice in 2 days for him to just be called a fool one day later because someone on the internet has a hot take.
And I have to say, Microsoft got a lot of heat when they told people that Windows 11 would not run on machines that were equally new if it didn't have an 8th generation Intel processor or TPM2. And people got very, very upset. In fact, that wasn't a real technical requirement, because subsequently people showed it works just fine. Windows 11, as one would expect, since it really isn't any different than Windows 10, works just fine on older hardware.
Like, we had this problem last year where Apple rolled out the live text feature and they said it's M1 only. And that's because they were leveraging the neural engines to do it. And that way it was always on. It was real time. You could hold something up to the camera. It had zero impact on the CPU, the GPU, any of your processing. It was an amazing feature. And people got really angry that it was M1 only.
Yeah.
So over the summer, they went back and they built a version that worked on Intel, but it was no longer all the time. It was on demand. It was no longer real time. So you couldn't do it on a camera. And it hit the CPU real hard. Like, when you were doing it for a few seconds, so it wasn't so, but they did a version of it that worked, and maybe they could do this too, but I think it would just be the interface, which is the least interesting part. Like, it's just a fancier version of the task switcher. The real interesting part is the swap, and they can't do that on older iPads.
I think you pointed out that I don't think Apple's failing was not to make this work on the most as many different iPads as possible, but just not looking ahead and realizing that we're going to have to explain why we are limiting this, because that's going to be a legitimate thing for people to get a little bit upset about again if they've just in the past 3 months bought a 2021 model iPad, that this one wonderful thing that we've spent the problem with the WWDC keynote is that like Apple loves these features and they're excited about these features, and the whole point of the keynote is to get everybody excited about these features, and you don't want to be like watching everybody like on the parade float like passing you by and that's sometimes what it feels like if there isn't something in the press release, something in the talk points for the interviews that they're going to be giving afterward, that, oh, by the way, we did try to get this working. You could sort of get it working, but it doesn't work well enough that it would be a good experience. And for us, the iPad is all about delivering the best possible experience to every single customer.
But I think that the other thing is that most people don't care. like these people have gotten into it. We care about it. We pay attention to it. But, you know, 99% of Apple's, they're going to build a PR pipeline for 99% of the users who are going to go, oh, that's great. I can now get this thing. Or, oh, I should just go get an M1. Or, oh, whatever it is. They're not going to care about that. And so, you know, people get tied up in it. But Apple's not going to spend PR resources until they have to, you know, in that area. Because you don't, I think a lot of times you don't know what people are going to latch on to be upset about. Because they're going to be upset about something. And sometimes it's better just to, it's kind of like sometimes I just push my bag through the metal detector and don't try to take anything except the computers out, not knowing what they're going to do, because I'm like, it's too much work to figure it out. I'll just get on the other side and sort it out.
out.
So,
but then again, WWDC really is all about like the people who do care about this stuff,
the nerds.
Not just the press and analysts. Right, exactly. I mean, when you're right in that you always have to make sure that the world that we live in, we have to understand that's not the world that the rest of the world lives in. Right. I was talking about WWDC in Chicago and in Boston radio, and both times I had to sort of brief people in on here's what the WWDC is, here's why it's important, here's why the news that comes out of it is important. But unfortunately, it's also the people who are paying attention who will then relay this information to other people. And like I said, it's a finer point. Apple, one of Apple's signatures is communication, like about trying to control the narrative, trying to make sure that they get out their side of the story in as complete a way as possible. So it's just a little surprising to me that when they get caught up in something that they might have figured out. It's not a scandal.
It's a little complex, too, because there's three distinct aspects to Stage Manager. There's the interface, where some people just like the way it looks, and they could do that. It would just run under Jetson, which means that any app under pressure would restart, which would be hella annoying. That the whole point of running it on M1 is that never happens. They have virtual memory swap now, so Photoshop can run full, Pixelmator can run full, every app can run full, so it runs more like a Mac. Then you have the external display, full external display support, which I think people are the maddest about, and maybe rightly so, because it doesn't need to be bound up into Stage Manager. They could implement that separately, and that's something I hope they do. And I recognize, to Alex's point, only Mac users, high single digit percentage of Mac users use external displays. Low single digit of iPad users use external displays. But wow, do they get angry they don't work right. And if Apple could do that, it would make them super happy. And then the last part is a virtual memory swap, which they can't physically do on most older iPads because ACE system isn't optimized for it. But that's the whole magic that makes this feel like it's a desktop suddenly.
And I think also, you're getting into the technical debt of trying to pay attention to the past. They could try to do some somersault to try to make this work and try to make it look pretty or have people have the impression of it. But to them, it's the past. I'm fairly certain that there is before M1 and after M1, and developing a bunch of things that fix something for the legacy format, which is really what it is. I'm sure, I know that everyone thinks that Apple has unlimited resources, but there's just a certain number of programmers. And they have lots of things to do. And I think that it's sometimes irrational to think they have unlimited resources to make everything work just the way they want. We had an article, I think, that, where the guy said we didn't have cut and paste because we didn't get around to it. We just ran out of resources, ran out of time. So the thing is that they just go, well, we have a limited amount of resources, and are we going to focus on the future or focus on the past? And Microsoft spends a lot of time focusing on the past, and Apple just has never. If you're buying into the Apple ecosystem, I don't think that should be your expectation.
Well, there's like Ken, who he did the keyboard for the first generation iPhone. He didn't have time to do cut and paste. Then they made him work on the App Store for the second year. Didn't have time to do cut and paste. But also, like when they did iOS 7 and they redid everything with this Gaussian blur, and they were actually injecting straight into the GL pipeline, which you're not supposed to do, but YOLO. They wanted to make it look like no other company on earth could support what the iPhone was doing, and it didn't work on older iPhones. And then like Eliza, who's a super genius, just figured out she could take a static image, paste it there, and very few people would notice on older iPhones. It's like, problem solved. It was like one engineering weekend. But they have real resource costs, and it's a trade-off. And if someone has to go and do this, they're not going to do something else.
You're talking about Ken Kashenda, who is the creator of AutoCorrect and worked on the keyboard on the original iPhone. He tweeted, the original iPhone didn't have cut, copy, paste. Infamous. The quickest explanation, this is his tweet, is that I didn't have time to do it right. I had too much keyboard auto correction and text system work to do, and the design team didn't have time either, so we passed on the feature for 1.0.
And I think that the most important word in that comment is right. And that is something that Apple, I think, has to, can get really tied up in, is they think about all of these things and how does it impact the, they're not going to just add a feature like a lot of companies do. just add another drop down menu. Adding cut and paste is thousands of hours of designers and programmers thinking about the best way to do it and testing it and then retesting it and then beta testing it and then gamma testing it and then, all these other things to make sure that it works just right when it goes out. It's something that I think that's why a lot of these, every little button, like people always ask, why can't they just add one little button? And You know, I worked in a lot of companies' research teams, and that's like that button's $1 million. Just so you know, like it's not like we're going to do it over the weekend. You know, you might prep it over the weekend, but it's still going to be $1 million. Put that button in.
But it's too bad they can't occasionally apportion the right number of people to the right kind of features. I mean, boy, it was a super bummer for such a long time to not be able to do cut, copy, and paste, especially when it was already available on pretty much every other platform. There's so many times I say that, God, I really, really admire how Apple did this, and I wish they've done it some or any other way. And so it's like, I don't want them to have a half-baked version of copy and paste, but having something that was functional as opposed to something that was perfect would have been so nice. But I would like to think that they had enough problems getting the iPhone out the door as a working phone with a working web browser that they could basically say, how about we're lucky to get upper and lower case on the keyboard. Let's just take the win.
They had Ken, and you know Microsoft's Windows mobile team had 378 people on the keyboard.
Right.
Just on the keyboard.
Well,
and Apple had Ken.
It's important. By the way, read the rest of the thread because it's not just about this cut and paste. It's about how difficult it is to do touch on a screen
Ken tells
like this.
The full story in like a 4-year-old episode of Vector podcast that he was on with me when he first left Apple. He sat down and decompressed about a I'll try to
he
find
wrote a
link
whole book
the
of
notes.
Course
yeah,
about
the book
this
is fantastic.
Creative selection
about 3 years ago.
We interviewed him. Megan Maroney did on triangulation, so you can go back and look
that
at
that. That was
as
really
well.
Good too.
Yeah, but I think the important thing is that when you hear this, it eliminates the conspiracy theory. And in a vacuum, conspiracy theories thrive. The conspiracy theory that, Apple left out cut and paste so that you would buy the next phone, you know, that this is a way of, you know, they held back features. People have always thought
the remote app wasn't updated because it was one guy and he had another job for those 2 years.
Yeah, isn't that funny, right? I mean, you would think Apple had plenty of resources to do anything they wanted, but...
Yeah, I think that most of those, I just don't see, anytime I look at these things with Apple, I don't see that they're specifically holding something back other than spending less money on a piece of hardware or something like that. It's usually that it doesn't run perfectly on an older device or it doesn't run whatever, so they take it out. But, they see it as more trouble than it's worth. But I don't think that they're purposefully trying to move people forward by not supporting something. It's just not... I don't think they care that much about the older stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that they... It's not a purposeful thing. It's just kind of like, there's plenty of
features on their punch list that they can add. It's not like, oh gosh, we make this phone too good. Nobody's going to buy next year because we have nothing to do. There will be plenty of things they can come up with, I'm sure, to make the next phones desirable. By the way, there is this kind of feeling, and I don't know if this is reasonable, that iPhone 14 is going to be a significant upgrade, particularly in cameras.
That's the story.
That's the story, right?
Every year, I guess.
I stuck with the 12. I didn't feel any drive to get the 13. Maybe the 14 will be.
I will say that the low light in the 13 is supernatural.
Yeah.
Like I take
and
photos
the
and I'm just like,
and the wide
I don't even understand. Yeah. I don't understand how it did that. Yeah. Like it just, you know, it's a person moving in front of me and I take a picture and it comes out great.
Well, I also have a Pixel 6, so I'm kind of fortunate, and an S22 Ultra. So, you know, I don't have to.
You only have two Ands, Leo Laporte. How many phones do you need?
Exactly. Well, I have to look at them all. That's why I buy them.
I think that the interesting thing will be whether we actually get a 48 megapixel imager. You know, I think that's going to be the.
There's also rumors
and telescopic
that the it'll be an A16. Only in the pro versions, but that will be fast enough to do 8K 60 frames. Isn't that one of the rumors?
Well, it needs the 48 megapixels to do 8K.
Who needs downsample or you pan and scan?
No, you pan and scan to get the shot you want to 4K, or you downsample to get better 4K.
Okay.
Well, and you're also, I mean, yeah, we have to see what happens with TVs and stuff. But I think
there are 8K TVs out there, and there's as always a lack of 8K content for now, but. Maybe that'll change when the iPhone 14 comes out.
Yeah, and the 48 megapixels is really good for photogrammetry. So it's if you have a LiDAR against a, we would go with, at 48 megapixels, I'd probably rather use my iPhone than a still camera to do photogrammetry, because at that point I have structured light from the, you know, the size of the chip in photogrammetry doesn't matter very much if it's good, if they're good pixels. So if it's a well-lit scene, the size of the, a smaller sensor size is actually better because you have more depth of field, which makes it easier for the photogrammetry. And when you add structured light, the LiDAR, to figure that out, and then the unstructured at 48 megapixels, if those are good megapixels, you know, that's the thing you always have to worry about. But if they are, the opportunity to get incredible detail in 3D models is pretty good. So again, something great for the pro, probably something you won't see. And that could be a clear differentiator between the 14 Pro and the regular one, is that you won't have that camera.
This feels like some revisionist thinking, though, because Apple's been 12 megapixels for some time, but there were, and there still are, Android phones with 30, 40, 50.
Well, so was Google, though, because they tuned everything for those. And moving to a new sensor changes, or a new camera, like the megapixel count, changes everything for all your AI models.
So are we saying 12 is not enough now? Or
for years we said, oh, 12 is plenty. And if you want pixel binning, like, you start to reach the limit of the physics.
Right.
And Google was hesitant to move, too, because you've got to retune everything. And people will tell you that a lot of aspects of the Pixel 6 are not quite as tuned as a Pixel 5. And it's going to take them a year or so to get it done. I saw the Sony slide today. I don't know if you saw that. But Sony says that from 2024 to 2030, advances in mobile are going to overtake DSLR. So because like everything like folded
I
lenses, like the periscope lenses,
to that
and the AI
already.
And the edge computing.
Yeah.
They believe they're going to exceed their SLR cameras.
Let's put it this way. You know, as I travel now, the decision is, do I need to bring a big camera or can I just get away with my phone? And increasingly, the phone is the right answer. You already have it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I took a photo with my daughter yesterday, you know, just a random photo with my phone. And I was like, well, it's not as good as my SLR, but wow, is it getting close?
The difference is more control, right? I mean, I think it probably is as good if I'm happy to settle for what Apple or Google or anybody is doing with the image, because there's a lot of processing. But with a DSLR or an SLR or a digital, I don't do SLRs. I use mirrorless. But those cameras, you have a lot more control over what's going on.
Yeah, but you don't. But the crazy thing now is that I can take this photo, this portrait photo, and I can take it into an app and change it.
Right.
You know, like it. So you have control.
And you get raw now.
Afterwards.
Yeah, you get raw now. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a thing.
And you get all this computational photography, and there's so much computational capability in these phones. Yeah. That
Andy's squirrels have never looked better.
Yeah. Andy, are you still shooting? Do you still shoot with your Olympus?
Yeah. Oh, no, all the time. Because there's still lots of things that you can't possibly do with a phone camera. For instance, I mean, I haven't been back to Comic-Cons since before the event, so I haven't been able. I haven't been able to shoot cosplay. Haven't been able to shoot roller derby. But I have started shooting the curtain calls at the Metropolitan Opera, and those are the.
Oh, I've seen your images. Yeah,
talk about a dark room, and you need a really good long reach lens, and you also need the ability to make, as you say, exactly the adjustments you need to make, not only make them but also make them on the fly as you go. That's just not possible. But the thing is, like, very few people are trying to get a good portrait of Joyce DiDonato, like taking a bow at the end of Cinderella. They just want to get a snapshot of the stage, and that will work just fine. The other complaint I could make is that, well, gee, I've been able to when I take pictures with even my Micro Four Thirds camera, which is a smaller sensor than most mirrorless cameras, the difference is absolutely palpable when I print them at any sort of a really nice wall hanging size. But even then, I mean, the one time that I entered a juried competition at a gallery and got into the gallery show was with a photo I took with my iPhone 7 and printed at like 11 14 by whatever. So, yeah. The last thing is that, like, even if someone like me is like, oh, well, geez, it's not really photography, it's because phone. But the thing is, if I am really going to say that, oh, well, it doesn't have the detail, doesn't have the resolution, I can buy AI-based tools for like $50 to $100 that will upscale, upsample, denoise, and basically turn this into exactly the sort of picture that I would have ever dreamed it to be. So, yeah, I mean, for most people, I used to, at Comic-Cons, I used to have, like, on on a good day, I used to have like the dual holster sort of approach, where I'd have the one camera with a long lens for like taking pictures like at panels, then the other one with a short lens for the portrait lens for taking pictures of cosplayers. And now if I need a short lens, I will usually just take out my phone because it will do a really, really good job.
Yeah, and I think that for me, it's the location data.
That's true too. Yeah.
I pick up an SLR and I go, I'm never going to find this photo.
My Canon 5D Mark IV had a GPS built in, but most of my cameras, none of the Sony's do.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just so frustrating because I use location in photos so often.
Yeah.
That it's like, I just type in, Washington, D.C., and I have thousands of photos that I shot in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Right.
That's how I find everything. And so like me looking at SLR, like I have all these SLR photos that are, in a library that I can't, find anything.
Yeah.
Although you have to say, at least with I use Google Photos as one of my backups, and it is just stunningly good at saying, a picture of a squirrel with water in the background on a cloudy day, and it will find exactly the picture that I was thinking of.
Yeah,
and Dolly will make it for you if it can't.
But it's even better if you have location. You're right. and I'm with Alex because you might have 100 shots that you took in the Washington Monument. And you might be able to find some of them by typing in Washington Monument, but you're going to find all of them by location.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
really nice. I just love looking at the map and looking at all these little photos all over the world that I've taken.
Alex's phone must look like undisclosed, undisclosed.
Photography is so many different categories and so many aspects. Right. Just the other day, I wasn't even really trying to organize my Google Photos library, but I just, I think I've, yeah, no, I was looking for I was looking for a picture on the vaguest of terms. I said, I know that I put this stuff on a tabletop. So I just did a search for tabletop. And after scrolling three or four times, I did find the picture I was looking for. But the thing is, it's kind of fun to just, how about just do a search for coffee and go take a trip through the past 5 to 10 years of your life and these random incidents in which coffee was somewhere part of the thing. It's not even a theme. It's just that it's a way to resurface pictures that you haven't really thought about. And it's really such a wonderful thing. This is why photography is about so much more than, hey, I've got a medium format camera and I had a professional model in studio lighting. Really, a phone and an AI system that could retrieve any photo that you want on the slightest whim is as powerful as any Hasselblad ever was when it comes to enjoying pictures and sharing them and making use of them. Because if it stays in your library, it's good to nobody.
I also think that there's no doubt that any camera phone today is better than the camera that, say, Henri Cartier-Bresson had. But, but
exactly.
Ansel Adams is rolling over.
It's the photographer, not the camera.
It's all about the decisive moment for Henri Cartier-Bresson. Yeah. Yes,
and so I wonder what he would have done with an iPhone. nevertheless,
one of the things that really put my head straight, or at least solidified a lot of my thoughts, was somebody on some board, a professional photographer's board, who said, "Look, if you're going to be sniffy about the quality of an SLR versus a phone camera, realize that in Times Square, if you take a look at the advertisements in Times Square in 1982, these huge photos of models were taken with 35 millimeter cameras with crappy lenses, with crappy, relatively
grainy
crappy
film.
Grainy film.
Yeah.
And yet it was made, into this big, big, huge 80 foot by 200 foot print.
Yeah.
So don't get all snippy about how it's not technically possible for bad film to create great prints.
This Cartier-Bresson print is $42,000 if anybody, and it's, it's worth it.
more than a Bitcoin now.
I wish I could afford it. Yeah, you need 2 Bitcoins to buy this one.
yeah. If you follow any of Apple's camera team on Instagram, you can see what they're capable of getting out of these things. And it's just no one needs to photograph that again. It's fine. Iceland's been done. Narwhals have been done. It's fine. Okay, whatever. Stop going on.
I have to say, I felt that way last time I was in Paris. I was going to go to the Eiffel Tower. I thought, should I bring a camera? And I thought, What can I take? What picture of the Eiffel Tower could I take?
Isn't it copyright? You can't take photographs because it's copyright?
You can do it for personal use. You know?
Yeah. The funny thing is when I go, I actually take all the photos, and I actually will go to a travel manual like Photos or whatever, or I take pictures, and I triangulate the position and the date, time of day of the photos that I really like. And then I go to those, you know, like, and I got to tell you, the hardest one is actually in Angkor Wat. There's a three foot square basically on the other side of one of the pools that sits in front of the main temple. That's the only place to take the photo.
Everybody takes everything. The picture from there.
And
yeah.
So the funny thing is that you show up at 4:45 in the morning, and you just hope that. It's like if it's someone who's Cambodian at 4:45, you know you're in trouble because they got paid to get to that spot, and they're younger and faster than you are, and so you're not going to get it.
This is the picture because I know because there's 8,000 of them.
yeah, and so that's the photo. There's a 3 foot square on that leg that is where you have to be to take that photo. Oh, no, that's the other side.
That's the other side?
There's another one on the other side. Anyway, so I've shot a lot there.
And you know your Angkor Wat.
that's the other side. That is actually where everybody stands. So there's like 2,000 people on one side of the road, and then there's like 200 on the other.
Hysterical.
But the funny thing is that especially Angkor Wat, this is how I got into it, is I would go around Angkor Wat and Bayan Temple, and I was trying to figure out the best place. Photos. And so I just looked at the tourist things and I go, oh, I like that photo. I like that photo. I like that photo. And I know where that is. And then I go and I take those photos. And now I do it all the time. Like if I'm going to a new city, I'll look at photos that I like of that city and then I'll go find them and take pictures. And someone asked me, they're like, why do you do that? Someone already took them. I was like, yeah, but the one I took is mine.
That's true.
like I don't
That's
have any copyright issues.
Exactly.
So if I want to ever use that photo somewhere, I can, you know.
Mine.
But not just that.
Like I still I was at I was at the Mac Tech conference in L.A. And the organizers will always organize these amazing like field trips. We went to the museum that had the space shuttle in it. We had the place all to ourselves all night. Mm-hmm. And one of the other attendees who was he was German. This is a character trait that I seem to associate with people I've met at conferences who are German, who are like, but why are you taking pictures of the space? It's been photographed so many times. Why do you need to take a picture of it? You've seen it. Mm-hmm. It was hard to explain that. Well, just like you said, it will be my picture. And I'm not just talking about my intellectual property, but it will reflect this moment that I had in front of this thing.
Right, right.
But also part of the fun of photography is to say, okay, I've got the obvious picture. I'm going to keep walking around until I find something that I don't think I've seen before. And I managed to take one of my, actually with another phone camera picture with the Nokia 1020, that really cool.
I was thinking about that one, the 41 right. megapixel Lumia yeah. 1020.
Right, right.
Yes.
That was so and I'm walking around and I see that you see all the thermal tiles on the bottom of the wing. One of the ailerons was like lifted a little bit, so there was a gap. And you could just see like the stars and stripes behind it. So I took this photo I really, really like of just this black field with just this one burst of color behind it. And I always tell myself whenever I go for a photo walk, it's my favorite thing to do when I have a day off, like, and I'm traveling on businesses. There are some really great pictures hidden here somewhere. It's my job to go out and find them. And that's the greatest Easter egg hunt.
And again, when you're outside, it's never the same photo because it's a different time of day. Even if it's the same time of day, it's a different sky. You know, it's a different, like, when I'm in Cambodia, I've gone every single day to Angkor Wat, take that same photo over and over again and the same video.
The light's
because
always
every
different.
Day, it's a little different. Sometimes a good day, sometimes a bad day, sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, like, by the way, just the tip for you, someone who's been to Rome a couple times. First thing in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Early morning light. Morning. Don't wait till golden hour.
Get the
sunrise.
If you want to get a good picture of the White House, honest to God, unfortunately, you can't get – now, the two sides that, you know, people get pictures of. One side, you're way too far away to get a good picture. The other one, you're right in front of it. But the thing is –
there's a million
people.
Sun,
Well, not just that, but the sun after, like – an hour after sunrise puts the entire facade into shade.
Yeah.
And so one trip to DC, I was determined to get a picture of the Holsteins, my cows, like in front of the White House. And so there I was explaining to the very, very friendly Secret Service at 6:30 in the morning why I was like setting up this little special platform. And
oh no.
I could see the wheels processing. I could see every hour of training this man had ever had. Say, okay, he's definitely a nut, but a lot of tourists are nuts who are not dangerous nuts. My job is to not ruin this person's day, but try to determine whether he is one of those dangerous nuts.
We did the same thing at Machu Picchu because it's so crowded, the Peruvian Inca ruins. It's so crowded that you really, but you can get up at sunrise, before sunrise, be the first in line, and then you get to watch the sunrise. But my trick for taking, so this is sunrise at Machu Picchu, but my trick for making a picture like that, which everybody has, good, is putting yourself in it. Then, then you know, a little tripod action. And then you got some.
Wait, Leo, did you magic erase everybody else out and then use the new iOS feature to pick you and Lisa up out of another photo and drop you into that one?
Oh, you're such a cynic.
Yeah.
Never.
But where's Chris
that.
Evans? Have you seen the thing with Chris Evans where you can put him everywhere?
Yeah. With his hands in his pockets? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but Renee was right. In 10 years' time, that's going to be the problem where you can just simply type into Google Photos a picture of me.
Dali
me and this person in front of Machu Picchu I want it to look like it was just a snapshot and not well taken so people think that it's real. And you'll have that picture if your goal is not necessarily to lead a life of wonderment and adventure and constant learning, but simply to make sure that at your funeral service, that table of photos that they blew up and put onto fiberboard to illustrate your life makes people think that, oh my God, I didn't realize he worked for M5. Wow. MI5. Wow. Yeah. It's going to be hard.
I cherish the memories and getting up at 5 a.m. to be first in line at Machu Picchu was definitely.
They can't take that away from you, Leo.
They can't take that away from me.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a little break. By the way, I will not be here next week. I will be having breakfast at a diner with Andy Iannacco.
Yay!
I hope.
Nice. Are you guys doing it live? You're saying you're live from the diner?
Flying to see my mom. I'm going to take my daughter. Abby and I are going to go see Grandma. Monday through Friday of next week, so I will not be hosting the show. Is it hot there right now? Because it's 99 degrees outside right now in Petaluma.
It's actually a very nice 70 to 75 degrees. Not warm enough to go into the water at the beach, but certainly warm enough to enjoy being at the beach and waiting at the shoreline.
As long as warm enough to enjoy a lobster roll, I'll be happy. That's all
we'll
I
get you.
We'll
get
about.
You Dell's lemonade. We'll get
Dell's
you
Dell's lemonade and a
roll.
Bag, a greasy bag of clam cakes, and I'm happy.
There you go.
Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you want to get into IT, I know there are a lot of places you can go. You can go to the bookstore, buy a stack of books, cost you hundreds of dollars. You could pay tens of thousands of dollars and go to a technical school and learn. Or you can do it for a lot less at IT Pro TV. Get the most up-to-date content, far more up-to-date than a book could be, the best possible IT training, and get those certs you need to get that job in IT, or if you're already in IT, get new skills, new certs, recertified, all of that, and do it on your own schedule with virtual labs, practice tests. You'll always be ready for the exams. Binge episodes, they're in 20 to 30 minute increments, so you could do it at a lunch break, whenever you've got a moment. And the IT training is always up to date because they've got 7 studios running all day, making sure that when there's new technology out there, when there's new questions, new certs, they're ready. 5,800 hours of absolutely up-to-date IT training, the most current content. And it is enjoyable. It's what they call binge-worthy. One reviewer said, quote, most engaging hosts I've ever watched. I highly recommend IT Pro TV, not only to IT professionals, but to people who have an interest in IT, but don't know where to start. Very educational and entertaining, end quote. I agree. These guys and gals are the best. They know their stuff. They're experts in the field. Their passion communicates. They have fun while they're doing it.
Check out the new CompTIA A+ Core 1 and 2 courses designed for professionals who support today's core technologies, security, networking, virtualization, and more. These A+ certs are kind of table stakes if you want to get into IT. It's a great way to get that first job. It's an industry standard for launching IT careers. You learn about well, you probably already know about it. I mean, that's the beauty of this. It fills in the gaps and it prepares you for the exams. Hardware, operating systems, networking, security, troubleshooting. You can always get better, and CompTIA's A+ certification is the standard. Two free webinars this month, by the way. We love all the free stuff IT Pro TV does. Chris Ward and Kelly Mack on Thursday will be hosting The Future of Project Management. That's at 2 p.m. Eastern. Of course, you can watch it on demand free later. But it's better to be there because you can ask questions. And then on demand earlier this month, they did All Things Cybersecurity, Hacking Your Way into the Field with Daniel Lowry and Zach Hill. That's a great way to learn about the cybersecurity field and what it takes to get a job in it. I know a lot of you are fascinated by that. And if you want ITT team training, you want to keep your team up to date, there's nothing better than IT Pro TV. Check out their business plans for your team. itpro.tv/MacBreak. By the way, make a note of this thing. Use the code MacBreak30 at checkout, MacBreak30, for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions. And not just for your first month or day or week or year, but as long as you stay active, 30% off. That's itpro.tv/MacBreak. And there's the wonderful Don Pezet saying hello. Watch his little video there and use the code MacBreak30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, we love these guys. Been with them since they began. Watched them grow, and it's great. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey at IT Pro TV. itpro.tv/MacBreak. The offer code is MacBreak30. So, Renee, Andy,
yes,
Alex, yeah. When can I get my M2, my midnight black or blue or whatever the hell color is, my midnight?
They said next month, Leo Laporte. It's not next month yet.
Well, but wait a minute. I can get the 13-inch I can get I got last week, right? Actually, you probably can't
MacBook
get it
Pro,
now.
You could order it, yeah.
Yeah. If you could. Yeah, but I think the
you were fast.
The delays are starting to stretch out now, aren't they?
You pretty much have to be there.
They didn't have all the SKUs available immediately for order. Like, you could only order the base SKUs, and then they started trickling. Like, the website was just, now we know why they take it down, people. It's because they can't put it up very well.
Yeah. Let's see. If I get the new 13-inch in space gray, let's get the build, no build to order. Let's just get it as is, because that's always going to be fastest. June 28th. That's not bad. Nope. That's not bad. That's a week.
It's next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do I have to wait till next month?
As soon as you do build to order, like you add it, you can do it, and it's like you can have it maybe in the middle of the school year.
That's the problem is you don't. I think you probably want to build to order because you don't want 8 gigs of RAM. So
not when you can get 24 now.
A little tip, though, the stores sometimes have different SKUs, right? And you can go there and see what they have.
They have base SKUs and a couple,
all the drive space.
Oh, yeah. That's Alex's advice because it's so fast. There's
I don't
nothing.
Know if this one's as fast as the studio, but man, did I blow it with the studio.
Yeah, yeah. Get as much
like
as you can.
So fast.
By the way, I just finally got the CalDigit Thunderbolt 4 dock.
Those are great, aren't they?
But you're still stuck with like 2 gigs a second.
Yeah, I know. It's internal is what you want.
Someone does make one. Someone sent one to me that you can fill up all 4 of your Thunderbolts in the back and you can get back at 5 or 6 gigs a second if you use them all at the same time. But that's about it.
Wait a minute. Like in RAID or something?
Yeah, there's someone. I need to look for it. Someone makes one now that is a piece of hardware that has 4 Thunderbolts on it. And so it's a drive with 4 Thunderbolts and you can just plug them all into the back of your studio.
It'll
basically build a software RAID.
That is what is in the back of my studio right now. It's the Otherworld Computing. It's 4 M.2 SSDs in a software RAID because Apple does that automatically.
Well, I have that, but that still only has one Thunderbolt, right?
One cable.
I'm saying you have to use 4 Thunderbolt cables.
No.
Into it. I'm just saying if you want to get
back to the
speed
of the
internal drive.
I could do that. I have 4 Thunderbolt 4 ports.
This is what you have,
CalDigit.
Right? This little guy.
from other
ones. Yeah. That's what I have. That's
it's really fast. It's great.
I like it. It's a little noisy. It's got fans in it, but
It's still only two.
It's funny how when you have a Mac Studio, you hear the fans on the external drive that you never heard before.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's loud. I have to say, I love that Mac Studio. And I got the Pro, not the Ultra. Lisa has the Ultra in the other room. But.
I have the Max as well, and I'm happy with it.
Yeah, except for the Max. That's what I got. Max. Mac. In fact, Max, I call it Mac Max. That's what I call it. That's its name.
Yeah, Mac Max. That's
Mac great. Max. So again, I don't know if I'm going to order it. I think Micah wants to get one. The M2 Air. MacBook Air. Yeah. You think when? I mean, why did they release this 13? Oh, because it was not a redesign.
Yeah, the chassis are all tooled
up. They were all done.
Yeah.
So you think...
Well, you have to put the new innards into it, but...
Will they do it the 4th of July?
That would be fun. They'll do it in July. They'll do it like a month after WWDC.
Celebrate.
So what is that, like July 6th, July 7th?
And I should get
next
it with
month, they like...
Everything Max. 2 terabytes storage, I presume, and 24
gigs
of 24 RAM.
24 gigabytes of RAM. You might. Depends on what you do with it.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? That. Right? And get the Midnight because, you know, why not?
Just remember, there's no fan, so you're going to be constrained to about 20 minutes of like full load, and then it's going to start down ramping on you. So the extra RAM is nice when you have multiple things going on at once, but you're still going to be in a thermally constrained chassis.
Yeah. Who had Marcus Brownlee had fingerprint issues on his Midnight Air?
I mean, it shows fingerprints.
You know what?
But yeah.
You got to get. It's really important. I should maybe send a note to Marquez. You need the Cheeto chopsticks, and then you won't get fingerprints on your Midnight Air.
Remember all those early Surfaces that had Cheetos on the Alcantara? They were just like permanently orange.
Yeah. That was a test somebody did.
You need those claws.
They rubbed Cheetos into the Alcantara surface. All right. So I'm just going to stay here. I favorited it. Got the little bookmark, added to my saved items, just favorite
it. You're going
to
stay here live until you can
order. I'm going to stay. We're not. The show does not end until I can order this, Apple. Hunger
Apple,
strike.
I hope you're watching.
I only have 12 cans of cheese balls and one giant barrel of Utz. But after that's over, I'm done.
He's a prepper. He's a Apple release prepper.
I'm in line, man. Will this be faster than my 14-inch M1 MacBook Pro?
Single
not for sustained.
Core, not multi-core.
Yeah.
Single core.
I don't do anything like multi-core. Emacs is not
multi-core. I bet you do.
Like,
there's not that many things that are still single core. Like, you're going to have older video games. You're going to have some aspects of Xcode. You're going to have app launching. You'll have some aspects of web rendering. But it's Python. But there's not a terrible amount of stuff that's not multi-core. Right,
I guarantee you Lisp is not using multiple cores. Actually, it might be.
Yeah, scripting is hard.
Yeah, it might be.
Switch to APL, man. Get a modern 1971 programming language.
I am using a very modern version of Common Lisp, SBCL, Steel Bank Common Lisp, that supports the M1 and the M2 and might well do.
Apple says 18% uplift, so they'll be about 18% faster for you. They have efficiency cores and they have performance cores. It also varies because it can be faster, but a lot of the speed improvements on the performance cores are based on the system level cache and the L2 cache. So the latency of the workload will also depend on whether you get like 5% more or 30% more.
Yeah. SBCL does support threading, by the way. But not that I'm ever going to use it, because mostly I just write things like silly little.
Well, I'm also going to warn people to ignore a lot of the benchmarking that's not done by Enantec.
Yeah.
Not going to know how to do it.
Yeah. So, okay. So maybe I just stick with my M1 Max Mac and just leave it at that. Not.
This is like for travel, Leo. This is like an iPad alternative if you want to travel with a Mac.
That nice 14-inch. 18% is not a lot.
For single core, yeah.
I just think
for multi-core, you've got faster cores, but they're not as many.
I like the Midnight. I don't care about fingerprints. And I really like the Midnight. And it's air. It's thin.
The neural engines are faster. And the AMXs are faster, but there's fewer GPUs. So it depends on your machine learning.
This is supply chain.
Stuff's complicated, Leo.
This is all the supply chain is holding us up, right?
for legacy nodes, like those little chips you get from Texas Instruments. Yeah. Like the stuff Apple's doing. Although TSMC looks like they're starting to suffer towards the end of the year. Like 3 nanometer is not out, 4 nanometer is not a lot of yield, not yield, but a lot of supply. So, I mean, it's, it, people are going to start hurting.
It's not over yet. I was just last night, I was reading about a team that was producing a niche computer, but a very interesting one, who had to once again explain why there was another delay, and people were stealing themselves for, okay, component shortages, we get that, factory timetables, we get that. No, it was the box, the cardboard they needed for the box, they couldn't get a hand of, and then it became like, okay, we got the cardboard, but you see, now it has to be put on a wooden pallet, and the German depot that makes those wooden pallets gets their nails from Russia, and they can't get the nails for the pallets, and that they managed to get out the first shipment anyway, but they're trying to basically make sure that, look, we're not like the coolest quick starter where we're just sort of like not we're not doing if we had predicted that nails from Russia, who has waged war on Ukraine, we couldn't plan for that. Well, I don't think you could have planned for that either. Well,
for one of a nail, a horse was lost. For one of a horse, the battle was lost, right?
I think that the just-in-time global production pipeline has just been ground to a halt. You know, it's the I think that it seemed like a good idea.
I feel lucky when something comes. Like when that CalDigit came, which I've been waiting for months. When that came, it's like, I won the jackpot. There's only three of them
back on the shelves. I feel that way now. Yeah. Like I go there sometimes. There's no pasta on the shelves.
Yeah. I just got an email saying that my play date. Starting to ship out the group two people for the next 10,000, and then you get my play date. Oh, by the way, Andy, you're in group three.
Like,
okay. I got the same email. I got the exact same email. That cable sasser. What is he doing to us?
I really want.
And I don't want to say cable, KB, Cabes.
Baby.
Remember
Andy?
The Steam Deck. Mike, I got the Steam Deck. Very disappointing.
Oh, George's husband loves it. Like deeply, truly loves it.
It's a Nintendo Switch on. You know, it's all swole up.
It's a Linus Tech Tips Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, but you don't want to. I mean, I tried playing Valheim on it, and if you've been playing on a 55-inch OLED screen, you just don't want to go down to that little, as nice as it is.
If Lisa takes you to Apple Picking, you can be playing Valheim while you're Apple Picking with Lisa.
Yeah, but I don't want to. See, portable is not that important to me. And so the games it's good at, like Stardew Valley, Mike has like suddenly become a gamer. See, that's not a gamer. He says, I play Stardew Valley. It's not a gamer. But he loves
The Simpsons, Micah.
It's great for Stardew Valley, but you could do that on a Switch.
Yeah. I got to say, I played with a friend of mine, got one and let me play with him for about a half hour to 45 minutes. I had to remind myself that I'm not into gaming. I just wanted this. This device is so beautifully put together for the purpose for which it was created. I could almost say, but I have $500. I could own this thing. And then what would you play on it? Solitaire? Yes. But I'd be happy playing solitaire on this. It's a beautiful device.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It gets hot. The battery dies
minutes. It's got a big APU in it.
Yeah. That's another one of those things. Oh, boy. A year ago. Can't wait.
It's for nerds, Leo. It's a niche device for nerds, but boy, do those nerds love it.
I am a nerd. I am not, you know.
Yes, but you're not that, like, you know, that particular kind of gaming.
I'm not that kind of nerd. I am a gaming nerd. I want to play on my 55-inch OLED screen with an NVIDIA, you know, card. And anyway. You know, the thing I'm not going to buy on that new beautiful midnight MacBook Air is Microsoft Defender. Microsoft Defender, which is the built-in antivirus on Windows, is now available to people who have Microsoft 365. For iOS, Android, Mac OS, as well as Windows.
You need to, though, Leo, to protect the people you're sending stuff to on Windows. I mean, that was one of the that was one of the attack vectors. Like you would like get the file, not know anything was wrong with it, and then forward
that's
it
a
on.
Good idea.
Like, you sent me a virus, you idiot, and you're like,
Now I should point out that I
iOS and iPadOS, you can get it, but because of the way Apple's written the operating system, third-party apps can't actually do anything. So
no.
On iPad and iOS, you're going to get security tips.
Yeah. It turns out that their behavior is indistinguishable from viruses, so you don't worry.
Yeah, yeah, security tips.
Don't double click on that. That'll be $80. renewing automatically.
iOS and iPadOS are so locked down. They're utilities.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't need, and for that reason, I honestly don't think you really need antiviruses on any mobile operating system, but that's just
like, just like to literally to scan documents from your team to make sure you're not passing them from one.
That's a, that is a good use. Yeah. For a long time, I used Clam on, yes, it's the name of an antivirus, Clam, yes, on Linux, for that reason only, because it didn't, in fact, scan for Linux viruses. It only scanned for Windows viruses, but that's exactly the use cases, you know.
So I download them like once a year if I think I've done something stupid. I run them and then I delete them because that's like, because they're so heavy that they make my computer feel like it has a virus.
Yeah.
And I keep them installed.
Yeah. Apple's relationship with web apps will improve in 2023. Oh,
no. They're getting back together. They've been talking.
Always like to hear that.
I don't know if they're going to get along. You know,
will
I think
they?
You know,
will they?
Keep
they?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Apple Insider. Actually, this is actually very, for me, this is very good news. Because what it really means is they're going to support PWAs better. They're going to have service workers. You know, this is really a problem because if you're on an iPad or an iPhone, you're basically a skinned Safari. You have to use WebKit. And if Safari does not offer PWA support, service workers being the chief of those, then it's not going to be a good platform for PWAs. It's not going to.
But devil's advocate, Leo, like, is it going to be like Java and Air and Electron, where a bunch of companies that would have made native apps are now just happy to, like, Amazon Prime throw out their common denominator app to every platform?
That's the beauty of it. It isn't like Electron. You don't have a browser in the bundle. Basically, it's a browser app that's saved to the, you know, you can do that right now with Safari.
No, but I mean, like, you get the same app, like all the web TV, all the smart TV apps are now PWA instead of OpenGL, but they're still commodity code ones deploy everywhere apps. They're not like bespoke to every. Yeah.
Well, it will be OS though, because the controls will be coming from Safari. And so I think it will be more native feeling. It is a window. It is basically a window on the web, except that if you have proper support for progressive, this is called progressive web apps. If you have proper support, it has offline. You can be used offline. Obviously, not a streamer, but the apps that can do stuff, if they're not connected to the internet, will be able to do those stuff, even though it's a browser window.
The original sweet solution comes full circle to Apple.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
But also they could be letting the fox into the henhouse, because if there might be a lot of companies who are realizing that, look, we could avoid a lot of pain if we stop creating an app for our service that has to be downloaded through the App Store. If we just make given that this streaming app is or this comic book reading app is inherently requires a connection to the internet anyway, why don't we just make this as a progressive web app? And so basically we can charge whatever we want. We can get whatever data we want from the user without having to do the privacy controls that are on the App Store. We can charge. We don't have to pay 30% for everything that we sell to that store. That's going to be a tipping point, I think. The moment that the moment that it makes sense to Facebook to stop having a bespoke app and start doing things directly through the web, the question is going to be, can they collect more information as a web client than they can as an actually installed app that can actually directly access hardware?
Facebook learned that lesson, because the first Facebook app on iOS was just a frame to the web experience, and nobody liked it, and so they did write a native app. They very famously.
Made it. Remember, Joe the gardener went and made it for years. It was just him maintaining the web app.
So Apple is allowing push notifications, service workers, you will still have to, as an app developer, you still have to fire up the permission dialog and allow when you hit the subscribe button. The idea of progressive web apps is you're on a web page. Twitter is a perfect example. And you want to have it as an app. Just like in the early days of the iPhone, you can press a button. It'll now be an app and have an icon, but it's a little bit more smart than just a bookmark to the web browser because of service workers. It can run offline. For me, for us, just purely selfishly, we've always had a devil of a time making custom apps for
our podcasts. But if you would support progressive web apps, it would be fairly easy for us to have a MacBreak Weekly app, for instance, that would automatically download MacBreak Weekly, allow you to listen offline, all the things that you would want a an app to do as opposed to the website.
Also, if Apple wants to avoid basically handing over their entire browser market to Chrome, they're going to have to keep making Enterprise happy. And Enterprise does so many of their apps, they don't want to have to maintain an iOS app and an Android app. They want to make everything accessible through a responsive website. And so they have to make sure that Safari is going to be just as good at Chrome at doing web apps.
Right. It probably is the case as well, Apple Insider observes, that this secondary ecosystem might have helped them with some governments that want them to force opening of the App Store. You know, it's a form of sideloading, in effect. So,
we're going right back to Steve Jobs' original argument, saying, hey, if people want apps, they can just we see the web as the best solution for third-party apps on the iPhone.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? Pavel,
when the Playboy app launched as a web app, that got so much press back in the early days of the iPhone because they weren't allowed on the store, famously, so they just made a web app.
Pavel Durov, who is the creator of Telegram, which is an immensely popular messaging app, close to 1 billion users now, says, we suspect Apple may be intentionally crippling its web apps to force users to download more native apps where Apple's able to charge that 30% commission. He's actually is one of many developers who are calling on Apple to provide a better experience in Safari. So I'm hoping they fix it.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting footnote. I can no longer say, well, gee, if on the Google Play Store they allow companies to sell things without the 30%, how why can't Apple do it? Now Google has recently tightened up their own rules, so no, I can no longer buy comic books directly through a Comixology app on Android anymore.
Right.
So that's unfortunately a battle that we seem to have lost.
Here is Dorf points to Telegram developers. Post on the WebKit channel about all the things he wishes mobile Safari could do. Push notifications is number one. That will now be a feature of the next version of iOS. There's some other issues like text fields moving around, centering, even if you don't want them to center. There's other random reloading, unsupported video stickers, no up with support, no shared workers, et cetera, et cetera. Many of these will be, I think, solved. With progressive web apps.
I think it is. I think if Apple really pushes the envelope of the progressive apps, it would take a lot of pressure off of them.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's thriving.
The only reason they do it, I understand. But there's a good reason. Do it, please.
Yeah.
I beg of you. Let's see. Bruce Schneier writing on his blog, schneier.com. With a warning, he says he supports two Senate bills, the American Innovation and Choice Online Act and the Open App Markets Act, both intended to reduce power to tech monopolies. But he also points out there are provisions in there that could be used to break end-to-end encryption, and the carve-outs for E2E are too weak, he says, and too vague. To protect encryption. Yeah, shocked.
I wonder why that would be the case in a country that's part of the Five Eyes.
Yeah.
I just wonder why you would put something in use quietly. Like, why don't we just insert this in here?
Yeah. So, let's see here. There's one that says, in S-2992, which is the American Innovation and Choice Online Act, would allow a company to deny access to apps installed by users where those app makers have been identified by the federal government as national security, intelligence, or law enforcement risks.
Yeah.
Which means Apple could, you know, if FBI says, hey, you know, this encryption gets in our way, boom. You know, that's all it takes.
It makes it impossible for Apple and other companies to work the way they usually do, which is saying, hey, look, we don't even have any data whatsoever that could be used by even us to break this encryption. That will basically, even if they maintain this as an end-to-end encryption, they will have to create according to the reading of this law, they would have to create a system so that they could retrieve the keys if they had to. And once the door is open, you can't shut it again.
He points out that, for instance, Apple could block third-party services from offering competing end-to-end encrypted backups of iMessage, because right now iMessage has a backdoor on the cloud that Apple can hand over unencrypted iCloud backups for messaging apps. And they would then say, well, that's why we can't have any competition here, because then, you know, you would be able to hide from the law enforcement.
Yeah. So. It's amazing. It's amazing how sophisticated lawmakers understand of delicate technology is when it comes to removing our rights from us. When it comes to figuring out how to put a plug at the end of a cable,
because they didn't write that part. Like that's why it's in. Let's be clear. Let's not think
that's a
they
very
wrote
good
that.
Point. Yeah.
That was written. That was written by the intelligence agencies. It was put in a way that looked as simple as possible, but gave them the tools that they need for this. That's what these. I mean, that's what these bills are about.
Right.
Which I said 6 months ago.
Yeah. but Schneier says on balance, he would like to see these bills passed, but these are, you've really got to resolve these issues before they do.
Yeah.
That's a lot. There was an interesting thread on Twitter where they talked about the reason we get into a lot of situations we are is that you have a bunch of reasonable people in the middle who just assume that these laws will work out. Like they'll say, oh, that's an extreme example. That'll never happen. You don't have to worry about that. And so they don't push to have anything codified, and nothing that isn't codified in the law ever actually really happens. So they'll say, it's an extreme law, but everyone will be totally reasonable about it when it's actually in place, and it never is. So it's really important to fight that, to have everything that is important enshrined in the law when it is first passed.
Yeah. Also, that there are no accidents in the drafting of this legislation. Just last week, Massachusetts struck down a voter question that was due for November on whether or not gig companies like Uber could classify their workers as contractors instead of employees. And the reason why it got thrown out was because, in big, big, bold letters at the top, it said, we want to be able to classify our gig workers as contractors and not employees. But then if you kept reading page after page after page, the subscript of page 18, paragraph whatever was, oh, and by the way, our company is going to be absolutely and completely indemnified against any crimes or accidents created by anybody working for us as a contractor. And, well, what do you know? The state Supreme Court actually read down that far and said, no, you can't do that. You can't deceive the voter that way, and so therefore we're throwing out your ballot question that you worked so hard and spent so much money to get on the November ballot. So yeah, nothing is in these laws by accident. The wording is very, very well chosen, and as Alex said, it's usually provided to the legislators by either a special interest group or intelligence, which is another special interest group.
Yeah. Good article in the Sentinel One blog about new security features in Ventura. Here's one I didn't know about. Renee, you knew because you're probably running the public beta, or am I sorry, the developer beta. Public beta is next month. But it's there's no more system preference panes. Oh, my God. How many years have I had to bend my tongue around the phrase system preference panes instead of just saying, go to the settings?
Yeah, controversial, though, because it really is the settings app. And it's not fully cooked yet. And people were complaining. Like John Gruber during the talk show asked Craig, he's like, there used to be these beautiful animations, these beautiful videos of how to use the trackpad. And that's all gone. And now it looks like a terrible iPhone cheat. And Craig's like, we need new videos. They're not ready yet. We didn't want to cram the old videos in there. So
there will be
back.
Videos. Good. All right.
Yeah. So it's not finished yet, but it is settings, and not everyone is happy about that.
I think that makes sense. That's what everybody calls them. That's what they should be, period.
Well, but also, nonetheless, the people who are writing about accessibility have pointed out that the new style makes it much more accessible. When you have a video that explains how to do something, it's not necessarily, unless they cook in a lot of talk over things to make it work for people who can't necessarily see that. I don't know what's the right question. I know which way I think is prettier. I know which way is clearer, but I don't know which way is better for the entirety of macOS users.
Honestly, since most macOS users will also be using iPhones, many will be using iPads. Consistent naming convention, a consistent look is not a bad thing.
It's a user benefit. So, consistency is a user benefit, but people are change averse.
Yeah, I understand.
Well, it depends. Sometimes they change just to be consistent. They take away something that works well. I would be very disappointed if preferences for the app that I'm looking at right now was not underneath the application menu, that I have to now go into settings, find the tile or find the line item that refers to this
app,
and then
hope
there's a setting in there.
Yeah.
I think that's ridiculous.
I'm very used to going to the Apple menu
We'll hot link you in.
If it says Apple and then if it says settings, not system preferences, I'm fine with that. Yeah. I think that's just modernizing it. It will be, you know, a very long list of settings. You'll have to get used to using that search
tool. That will be easier to find.
And scroll.
It's just going to be way easier to do.
Search and scroll.
Yeah. A big change, Sentinel One points out, is now you can manage login items, launch agents, and launch daemons all from a single place in system settings. And anytime anything adds a persistent login item, you will get notified about it, and you will be able to turn it off in the settings. And that's a long, long needed update. It's really a, you know, I think many users don't know, you know, all the different places you can look to find launch agents and other persistent.
It's labyrinthian right
It's
now.
Labyrinthian. Launch daemons, log. Is it a login item? Well, is it a launch daemon? Is it a launch agent? Why doesn't it show up in the system preference
one of the
pane?
Nice things about iOS is that there are multiple places. Like if something applies in multiple areas, they put them in all those areas. Like I shouldn't have to like know the one place
it
that it's all in. Just put it everywhere.
Be,
I don't want.
Well, it'll all be, I think it'll all be in the settings.
And I think didn't we have this in Mac OS 7, like startup items? Like it was just like there was a, as I remember it, there was like a startup well, item thing yeah. where everything oh, yeah, that was yeah. going to start up was available.
It's for, one of those things that grows like Topsy, you know, they add it here and yeah. add it there and they put yeah. it there and they yeah. put it here. And then pretty soon you got 15 different places. Yeah.
And by the way, in terms of modernizing system preferences, remember that in System 6.02, it was a list of things and you have to click on each one to get the sub item. So
right.
maybe we're taking one step into the past, a half step
back forward. To the future. Yes. Anyway, I think fantastic to have at least one place, and I hope this is the case where we can go and see all the items that launch on login. That will be
we'll give them everything.
Huge.
Boot huge. Into verbose mode by default. Huge. You have to hold down three keys in order to not see the kernel loading in.
Yeah. And there is a new endpoint security logger. Okay, I don't know anything about that, but apparently Sentinel One's very excited about ES Logger. We'll let you know more about what's going on with your machine. It will support DNSSEC, which is really good and much needed secure DNS. Steve Gibson's talked a lot about DNSSEC. So having that built into the OS improvement, good. A plus, Apple. I've been for, you know, and I haven't last three or four, and Micah knows this cause he sees me put it into the show rundown and then take it out wanting to recommend Diablo Immortal. I pre-ordered it, cause I'm a huge Diablo nerd. I love all the Diablo games, played them for hundreds of hours. And I got it the minute it came out, and I've put it since that week, which is like a month ago, every week as my, and then take it out of the recommendations. Not because I don't love it. I do love it. The problem is, it's funny because reviewers are giving it high reviews. Users are getting it terrible reviews because of its loot box mechanics. And the real problem, which is if you're willing to pay literally hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, you can
hundreds
be...
Hundreds of thousands of dollars to max your character. $100,000.
Yeah. You can be the best.
100.
Yes, it's made
if
for
you're
YouTubers.
Mr. Beast, you have the best character
yeah.
Ever. In the Jez from Windows Central, to his credit, wrote a screed about how terrible this is. That this is peak sleazy monetization at its worst and needs to be regulated. Which, if you know Jez from Windows Central, he is the biggest fanboy of every game ever. So for them to have done this to him is a tragedy.
I will say this, and I agree with Joseph Cox writing for Motherboard and Vice. He says, how I learned to stop caring about Diablo Immortal's pay-to-win mechanics. You can still play it for free forever. You may be beaten by people, but it's still quite... I enjoy it. It's fun. It's Diablo on your phone or iPad. I'm not crazy, and I never have been. I've said this many times. You say it all the time on iOS Today about how controls... or on work on the iPad where you have to do your thumb on a phony controller and all that. I mean, but that's Diablo. It was always designed around a gaming controller, not around touch.
Did you see the stream this weekend, Leo, where I forget his name, he spent $15,000 to get his first 100% gem and then deleted it through his computer. Well, he didn't throw his computer, but figuratively through his computer and deleted the game.
Oh!
Just in protest.
That'll show him, giving him $15,000.
Yeah, they'll boy, that take again. That. Take that, yeah. Blizzard.
Yeah, it'd be nice not to have microtransactions and loot boxes, and it certainly would be nice not to get beat by somebody who spent thousands of dollars to beef up his
character.
I think
it's just the shamelessness that, like, people don't mind paying a little bit, but the shamelessness, like the $100,000 mark, I think, put people off.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that if you feel like you could work your way up to it and you don't want to spend the money, like, as I've said before, like, the game that I really enjoy is Kingdom Rush, and you can definitely buy a lot of things. I just never have. You know, I just sit there and I just play a certain... I can play it out and just start building up coins until I buy what I need. And I think that that is a good model, is that you could work your way up to it. But I think with Diablo, it doesn't feel like you, I mean, you could in your lifetime.
I think if you don't spend money, you will never be at the highest levels.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But you, I justify it. It's still a fun game to play, but I'm never wanted to be on the leaderboard. I never was good enough to be there anyway. So it's really, it affects people who, I guess, are really talented gamers.
It's a good model to make money.
Yeah.
Well, also, I think it's an obstacle towards people getting into the game or getting into gaming to begin with. The one type of AAA style game that I like are racing games. And every time I try a new one, it's like, okay, great. I had a great time driving around this track very, very badly, but I'm looking forward to going again. But no, instead of just saying, let's go for another race, let's go for another run. It's like, hey, you finished great. Now, hey, look, boom, 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 boom. Now here you are in the garage. Do you want to upgrade your tires? Do you want to get new livery? Do you want to, maybe you should upgrade your fuel system. I said, no, I want to go back onto the, gas me up, new tires, put me back on the track so I can continue to drive and, you know, drive like a Massachusetts person without any of the insurance points affecting me.
By the way, you can now buy, even though you can't get a midnight blue MacBook Air, the dual USB support compact power adapters for $59.
This is one place I feel like Apple has really fallen behind. Like I would never buy. I mean, I buy a lot of Apple products.
No, their but
chargers
not, never the
are
chargers.
Not one of them.
Never
you're
the
kind of
chargers.
Like with the GaN technology. You're kind of like, I've got so many things that I can plug into of all these different formats that work for me, and I just feel like, I mean, it's nice that Apple makes them. I guess you have to make them, right? But 35 watts, you're like. It's so small, it's so tiny. Why would I do 35 watts for two of them?
No. And there's so many great chargers out there, Anker, and so many great chargers out there.
The only difference with this one, and I don't think it's compelling, is that it's smart. It doesn't just push out raw charge through both outlets. It measures the capacity of the devices and then can adjust the relative charge depending on what needs something at a given time.
At least on paper, most of the newer ones that are actually a little bit more expensive than the Apple one. They at least claim to. I don't know if they do or not, but they seem to. I don't know. They charge my devices really well. So.
Yeah. 9to5 Mac had the rundown saying that if you connect a Mac and a notebook and an iPhone or iPad, each device receives up to 17.5 watts. If you connect an iPhone and an iPad, each receives up to 17.5 watts. But if you connect a Mac notebook or iPhone and an Apple Watch or iPhone or AirPods, the notebook or iPhone receives up to 27.5 watts, and the Apple Watch or AirPods receive up to 7.5 watts. But yeah, the whole point of chargers is having multiples of them. You have to have like a half a dozen of them. One in every bag, one next to every place that you are likely to be doing more than an hour's worth of work. And so if I don't care how nicely designed the Apple charger is, and I'm sure it's wonderfully designed, I'd much rather have something that has a more dull gray, easier to manufacture finish and have an extra 65 watt charger than be stuck with just one Apple 35 watt charger.
Yeah.
Those of us who have been using Macs since 1984 are very familiar with Claris. The cow dog.
Claris, dog cow, please.
Dog cow. Pardon me. Oh, God. Oh, I deserve to be spanked for that.
Woof.
Woof. Woof. Woof. That is back. Claris is back, baby, in the new Mac OS Ventura printer dialogue, at least according to the Shadow Facts blog. This is on the left, the original Claris the dog
lost
cow.
A little of a character. I think the problem is the new one has the ear goes up instead of like a little wagged. Look at the front ear.
doesn't wag down properly. That's not my only
because this one is vector, so you can scale it all the way up. But the thing is that I think there's going to be sort of like a philosophical debate where is Claris blocky because Claris was originally created to be in a system font from the original Mac, or is that just simply the nature of Claris to be blocky? And if you scale it up, you're supposed to scale up the block.
But I think I just feel like there's character there. There's look at the ratio of the eye to the ear, the tail, like all these things you could have kept when you built that out, and they smoothed those out. Like the tail has still got so much more character in the old one, and you got more resolution now. I'm really upset about this. It's very dramatic for me.
The blog post is great because it does go into like they were trying to figure out, wait, am I imagining this? Is this just like an individual programmer who did this? But he did verify that it happens.
Oh,
in
it's
every
hysterical.
App. Does not happen in Maverick apps.
He goes deep into the AppKit hop file, and he's really digging through the. This is a very good post.
And the payoff for scrolling to the bottom is a link to a PDF version of the new Vector Claris. And yes, I did download it. And yes, I did scale it up to be like absolutely huge. And it's like, you know what? I'm not willing to say that this is the Claris that I grew up with in the 80s. However, perhaps it's like on Iron Chef, on the Netflix version. You don't get Chairman Kaga. You get Chairman Kaga's nephew introducing the Iron Chefs. I think this is Claris's nephew.
I think it's kind of like someone got a facelift and you're like, ooh, you shouldn't have done that. You know, ooh. it looks smoother, but it's like, you know, you lost the character of who you are. So I think
it's a Dolly version of.
Let's zoom in on Claris, dog.
There's not as many wrinkles, but
PDF. How big can it
go
get?
Go in forever. You can get as long as you want. But I think that there was just some easy stuff that you could have kept there. That's all I'm saying.
I almost opened up
Infinity Designer. I was like, I got to do this again.
I got to say that's probably a much easier Claris to tattoo than the bitmap version.
Yes, that's true.
You don't need someone who's good at pulling nice sharp lines. This is
it's not the bits that are
black
the problem,
has
though.
To be on point, but
the shapes are clearly different. The shapes are clearly different, and you've lost some of the the face is shorter now. The ear doesn't have the character. There's so many things that are wrong with that
image. That's Claris Qua.
Did you, Renee, immediately print something from your Mac OS Ventura?
I haven't owned a printer in like 20 years.
Oh, here's the history of the dog cow. Claris the dog.
Oof.
Bearded. Oof. 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 This is all Susan Kerr's work. You can blame Susan Kerr for this. The great
her version.
She's awesome.
Claris was the official symbol of Apple Mac and Dell developer support. It used to be like in 1985, you would suck up to any member of the developer team you bumped into at Macworld because they would probably have a green move pin, and you just want to make sure you have a move pin or else you're not one of the cool
kids. I want a move pin.
Now that's in somebody's. Isn't there a famous story where Steve goes, we're getting rid of everything. We're getting rid of all this old stuff. And they're like, Steve, you can't. It's history. It's like, you tell them they have 24 hours to salvage anything that they want or it's going to be gone. So I think all that stuff is in people's garages now.
I managed to buy an official Claris Moof watch before the hammer fell down on all the licensing stuff. Three watches that I own that I'm scared to wear. One is the beautiful watch that my mom gave me for my 21st birthday, which is too nice to wear. The second is my Millennium Falcon watch that I bought three of because I loved it so much, and now I'm down to my last one. And I don't want to break it. And my Claris the dog cow watch because, again, it's too nice. I don't want anything to happen to it.
Here is a Claris the dog cow merry-go-round rendered in QuickTime in 1991. Each video took over 24 hours on a Mac 2FX. It was hard to do this stuff back in the day. Oh, yeah. You know, we've come a long way. All right, get your picks ready, boys, because
Leo, I have one last thing. If we can just quickly get into a terrible fight at the end of the show.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Yes.
I was going to say Microsoft being forced to repatriate data to Paris, Apple being forced to repatriate data to China, and now TikTok being forced to repatriate data to the U.S.
Yes.
I know those are all very different countries, but we seem to have very different reactions to all the different data repatriation laws.
We talked about TikTok on Sunday on the big show on Twit. And I mean, who do you trust with your data more, the Chinese Communist Party or Oracle? Honestly,
that was not the twist I was expecting on that hot take deal. That's amazing. Larry in his samurai suit.
I'm no fan of the Chinese Communist Party, but I don't think they're going to do anything with my
also,
name.
Also, their access doesn't change depending on where the data is stored.
Yeah.
I would like to introduce as a topic of evidence in this discussion that Chinese Communist Party would be the enemies in a 1970s or 80s Bond movie. Oracle would be the name of the evil company or the last name of the evil guy in an 80s or 90s Bond movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going with the
70s evil villain.
And a ceremonial cheese puff.
I feel like that moment, that question is kind of a Larry David moment.
I know.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Well, at least no one will have access to it if it's on Oracle. I mean, that's the same part.
Yeah. How can the thing is,
every hacker...
I gotta trust a guy named Larry. As soon as I found out his name was Larry Ellison, it's sort of a brotherhood of Larrys here. I don't know any Larry Chinese people. The only thing make it perfect is if he were bald.
Mm. Good cheese puffs.
Well, that was fun. I appreciate
that. Though?
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. And now, a word from our sponsor while you prepare your picks of the week. Claris, the dog cow. Not the cow dog. The dog cow. Let's get that right. Our show today brought to you by ZocDoc. I love this idea. There's some amazing doctors out there, but you know, what good is a doctor who doesn't take your insurance, right? With ZocDoc, you can focus on doctors who are in network, putting you on the path to see the doctors who are right for you. You don't have to waste time hunting down Aunt Shirley's cash only chiropractor or the dentist your coworker recommended who's out of your network. No one knows what you're looking for in a doctor better than you. And no one's better at giving you the tools to find the perfect doctor than ZocDoc. The people who created ZocDoc found the major pain points in healthcare, all the things that weren't working. They said enough, as great entrepreneurs do. They made booking a great doctor surprisingly pain-free. Now, this is a free app. It shows you doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance. They're also available when you need them. All three are very important, but I love the patient review part because you want a doctor that patients like. We've all had that doctor who's just a jerk. No, I want to know ahead of time. Read up on local doctors, get verified patient reviews, see what other real humans had to say about their visit. So when you walk into that doctor's office, you're set up to see someone in your network who gets you. ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com. Go there. Choose a time slot, whether you want to see the doctor in person or do a video visit. And just like that, you're booked. You find the doctor that's right for you. Book an appointment that works for your schedule. Every month, millions of people use ZocDoc. It could be your go-to whenever you need to find and book a doctor. In the chaotic world of healthcare, let ZocDoc be your trusted guide to find a quality doctor in a way that is surprisingly pain-free. With ZocDoc, you can get your docs in a row. Get it? Mm-hmm. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Download the ZocDoc app for free. It's on iOS and Android. Then start your search for a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. That's ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Please use this /MacBreak. That way they know you saw it here. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. I so rarely have a pick. I'm going to kick the picks of the week off this week because I saw a post from Harper, Twitter.com/Harper, one of my heroes. I love Harper. He worked in the Obama administration. Smart guy, fully geek. He was on an airplane, and he saw a CO2 measurement, a carbon dioxide measurement, nearly of 2,000. And he said, I thought airplane air was supposed to be good. Now, it's important in this era of COVID that
there be ventilation on an airplane. So I thought, well, I'm taking a couple of trips. I'm going to go back east next week. I'm going to go to Alaska, first Seattle, then Alaska in a month. So I bought this. This is an Aeronet for about $250, and it does actually three things. It tells you the CO2 parts per million. It tells you the current temperature and the humidity. So it actually is a really good indicator of a comfort level. OSHA says the carbon dioxide, which is what we are exhaling, level in air can be as high as 5,000. After that, you might pass out. studies show, in fact, somebody, well, I was talking about this on Saturday, and a listener sent me a very interesting study that showed that, in fact, when the CO2 level reaches as high as 1,000, you lose about 25% of your cognitive ability. 1,500, you're talking about 50% of your cognitive ability. It's a big, big deal. So I thought, well, I'm going to be on an airplane. I think I'm going to try this. This is the Aeronet 4. I didn't get the Pro version. It does tie to your smartphone, so you can see, on your smartphone, you can see a graph of all the measurements. It is from aranet.com. I'm not necessarily recommending this, but before I fly, I think I kind of want to know what it's going to be like. And not like I can open a window on the airplane or anything, but, you know, I think it's a good thing to collect. So I have it, and it's 540 parts per million right now, which is very good. By the way, this is something you might want to use in sealed offices, too, because often sealed offices don't add enough fresh air to the mix.
Maybe that's why I'm always getting tired in sealed offices.
Yeah, it's exactly why. Yeah. Classrooms, you know, they don't open the windows. And the reason airplanes, I think, are so high after reading all of this, I think the reason airplanes are so high is because it's not that they're not filtering the air with HEPA filters. So maybe they are taking COVID particles and other viruses out of the air, but they don't want to put in fresh air because it's freezing and they have to heat it. And it's expensive. It also adds to the drag on the airplane. So it's a costly thing to do. So they limit the amount of fresh air being mixed in.
And tanks of oxygen are not a good idea.
No, not on an airplane.
They start leaking. Bad things happen.
They can let the outside air in. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not without. Oh, yeah.
Open a window.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Crack a window.
Yeah. I wish I could. Anyway, here it is from Aeronet. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll be bringing back pictures of my CO2 level.
It's like Andy with his Holsteins. You just have to have that little thing around.
I could. I have it everywhere.
All over the world.
Here yeah.
Here's a picture of the restaurant. It was $483. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw this from Harper, I thought, well, this is going to be a big issue. But then I realized, oh, no, they're probably filtering the air. It's just they're not putting fresh air into the air because it's, you know, for energy reasons. And I knew that airplanes did that. So normally this would be a kind of proxy for COVID, right? Because ventilation is very closely related, but probably in an airplane, it's not a perfect proxy. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The Era 4. My pick of the week, plus also the Cal Digit. I almost brought that in, and I thought, no, I'm never letting it on my site. And, of course, Planters Cheese Balls. Or Diablo. Utz. I don't know.
And Diablo.
Immortal.
All I need are these abs.
Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
All right, so mine is just 100% absolutely delightful. There's a YouTuber named Patrick H. Willems who did a lot of, like, you do video essays on movies and TV shows. He got really famous by dissecting the color grading of Marvel movies and why he hates it so much. But he's a brilliant film theorist. And during the pandemic, ended up getting stuck at his parents' place. So he started doing this weird narrative intermix into his essays where a googly-eyed coconut became his best friend. And it turned out over the intervening years that he was a Patrick from an alternate dimension who was a tax evader who had came and replaced our YouTuber Patrick. And it all built up to now he has done a full-length 90-minute feature film on Nebula, which you can just play the trailer, Leo. It's not in Content ID. Like, it's totally fine for you to play.
Oh, thank you.
But it is just...
a googly-eyed coconut The star
that's
of the show.
That's friend of the show. Dave Witzkus is Dave the agent. Dr. Mike is in there doing physicals. I am in there. I have a brief cameo in it. So do a bunch of other YouTubers. Mr. Beast is in it. It is just... I have not seen something pure fun. Like, it's got a little bit of a Kevin Smith vibe to it because it's an indie movie, and it's got a lot of in our industry banter and a lot of cameos from people in our industry. But I wasn't sure what to expect. The editing is so good. The storytelling is so funny. I just enjoyed the ever loving stuffing out of it.
It's kind of amazing. Was it shot on an iPhone?
No, he is like, I believe it was shot on Canon cinema cameras. Oh. I'll have to double check with Patrick on that. But it's
pretty impressive.
It is just a complete labor of love. And it astounds me that, like, going from YouTuber to making stuff like this in a couple of years is just such a dream artistic journey for me.
The Night of the Coconut. And yes. It's coming to Nebula, or it's on Nebula right now. So if you go
to Nebula,
Nebula.app, you can... you can buy the whole
it's got a takeover. There's a whole Charles takeover when you log in.
Nice. And, of course, Mr. Rene Ritchie is also part of the Nebula fun.
Yes. Although, go watch that movie first. It's just like you'll be in a good mood to watch my stuff afterwards.
Nice. The Night of the Coconut.
Yeah.
Yum. You have to be signed in to watch it.
Yes. It's an original. So, like, that's one of the things with originals is they cost a lot to make. So, you have to be signed in to watch it.
Yeah. Very cool. Thank you, Renee. Andy Inako, pick of the week.
Something really kind of fun if you're screwing around with 3D for any reason whatsoever. Google decided to release a data set of over 1,000 really highly detailed scanned 3D models of common household items, accompanied with an academic paper that basically says that, hey, there's a lot of research being done about, like, scene composition and robotic manipulation of objects and simulation.
Squirrel.
But there aren't, like, standards for what objects are we dealing with. So, hey, we spent a whole long time scanning, like, 1,000 different items. And so now here's the entire library that you can just basically download and use. And I'm not thinking about using these things for research. I'm thinking about just saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool for an AR project to simply put this little stuffed plush squirrel, like, somewhere in the scene of this thing that I'm building? Or it would be nice to do, like, a 3D print of this Doctor Doom action figure, or all these other sort of things. It's charming because these objects are so random. Like, it really did seem like for a 2-week period, just this team of people were just bringing in crap from home, because they've got, like, 3 dozen different kinds of shoes. They've got, like, boxes of 12 packs of Pepsi, 5 different flavors. And I'm just to demonstrate that, like, they've got all the product packaging correct on all sides. So it is like 5 different 12 packs, but you got, in case your robotics model, you need, well, it can lift a 12 pack of Diet Pepsi, but can it do a Diet Wild Cherry Pepsi? What if the artificial sweetener were not the aspartame, it was actually sucrine? Could we do actually Pepsi Max? So a lot of toys, a lot of children's toys, a lot of consumer products, like, even still in their packaging. It's worth knowing about because if you're just setting a scene and you need to have, like bric-a-brac on the shelves, like, you need a couple of vases, you need, like, a potted plant, you can probably grab one for free of really, really good detail right here. And yeah, you can download them in 2 or 3 different formats, and yes, SDF is among them.
Fun.
Yeah.
GazeboSim.org if you want to get your 3D models. Thousands of them. Absolutely free. Alex Lindsay, pick of the week.
Yeah, so I always think I should drink more water, like, but I never do. I never remember it. And like,
you need
an app. The funny thing is that the problem for me is that anything with tech is kind of like putting molasses into my cereal, or sugar into the cereal. Like, oh, I'll eat more of that. It's got some tech in it. I have something I can measure, you know? And so I'm afraid that I went out and I wasn't sure if I'd actually use it. So a couple of weeks ago, I got this thing called Hydrate Spark. And I bought it, and it was absurdly expensive for what
bottle,
it does.
Smart water bottle, ladies and gentlemen.
So here it is, and I use it all the time.
Oh, my.
And so anyway, so the nice thing is, here's the funny thing about it is, I actually, and I have the
bigger one than those ones. Like, I went ahead and I was like, I'm going to be at home.
Yours looks really
big. Giant. It's
you
like,
have the Pro, the Titan?
I think it might be the Titan.
Is it plastic or is it metal?
It's metal.
Oh, well, then you
it's
might metal. Have the Pro, right? Let's see.
Yeah, so,
I mean,
so
this you is can't how big get bigger is. Than a Pro.
I would, if I traveled with it, I'd probably get a smaller one.
Well, they have
one.
A 32, like you got the 32-ouncer, that's why.
Yeah. And so it's a beast. Yeah,
why
and
you get
so
it in pink?
You know, that's all I have to say. Now here's the funny thing is that so far I've had this much. This is my
20 gallons of water.
20.5 ounces.
Oh, ounces. Oh,
I don't know. I don't know what it is in milliliters.
Is that in metric?
I'm sure you can set it that way. You can see I crushed it yesterday. So I had 60 that. I had 60 ounces. I was anyway. And anyway, so and then if I take a drink, so if I just go like,
I'm actually tempted. It's only $80. Mm. Is the installation good? I mean,
and then you set it down. The installation is excellent.
So it stays cold or hot?
It's the best water. So then what it does is it'll flash here. Let's see if it usually
can you put vodka in it? Is the question.
You can. That could probably actually control your intake. So the bottom will glow, and now you can see I just took a swig of three ounces, and so. Anyway, and the funny thing is, so the bottom glows. This is the part you kind of charge, and you every once in a while. I haven't charged it yet, but I'm sure I'm going to have to. And someone will be like, I keep on drinking water, and it's not measuring. And I'll know that I have to plug it in. So the but the thing about it is it's not just that it's a geeky kind of thing. It is a geeky kind of thing. It's a really well. It's like the best water bottle I bought. The water doesn't taste like anything.
Did you get the chug or the straw? Which did you?
I got the.
Did you opt for? I might get the straw.
I think it's the chug. I think it's the chug I got, yeah. Which I like a lot.
Boy, I can't decide if I want a chug or a straw.
Number for water.
Yeah, it's.
I'm torn.
It's really good, and it's again. Here's the worst part. I may buy the smaller one for when I travel because I went to LA last week for a couple of days and I didn't take it. So now I have 2 days that have no data, which is very upsetting for me.
Worst? You know, your quantified self has a gap.
I know, exactly. And I know that I'm drinking more water and I know that I feel better. And that should be enough to get me to drink more water without the cup, but it's not the same. And again, I think that part of what makes it work is that it's not that it's a bad cup with a measurement tool. It's actually the best water jug I've ever had. For $80, it better be. You know,
it
like,
glows.
You know, but it's,
it,
yeah,
it glows
at the bottom.
In the bottom. Yeah. I'm getting the bright pink one. Are you kidding?
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to probably get another one for when I travel. I don't know how two of them fit into this and whether it matches them or not. You know, that's the only problem I have is I don't know if I have to tell it that I'm using the smaller one. I haven't figured that part out yet, but if it was without the measurement tool, I would still use it because it's a really comfortable one. The chug one, at least, is a really comfortable. I thought the straw was going to be weird, so I just bought the chug one.
I'm getting the straw.
It did take me. I just want to point out, if you're looking at it, I'm not that smart. I'm not a very smart person. It took me a long time to figure out how to open it. I kept on trying to go like this. I'm just going to save you some time. If you push it down like this, that red bar means it won't open.
For an additional $10, you can have a chug lid and a straw.
And there you go. And then the key is push the bottom part and it just pops open. But when you finally do that, I guess I've taken away the feeling of accomplishment that you might have there, that you sat there for a day or two trying to figure out how to open the thing.
I don't actually believe you need to keep track of how much water you drink. Maybe vodka, but not water. You know, you drink when you're thirsty, you'll be fine. I still want it.
It's really cool.
It glows every time.
You get the positive reinforcement.
It glows when you drink.
Every time you have a drink, about 10 seconds later, it goes,
It rewards you.
Yeah.
Does it sigh?
It doesn't sigh until the end of the day when you only are like 32. It's like when it's obvious you're going to bed, it goes
sigh. I tried to make him drink more.
I'm like, I can't drink anymore at this time of day or I'll have to get up in the middle of the night.
I kind of want this.
You don't need it. I didn't need it, but I am drinking a lot more water and I feel a lot better. I think I have better skin.
I'll tell you the truth is the other reason I need it. Yesterday I have a Bubba, which is just a thing with a straw in it, and I made up a nice 32-ounce Bubba with my vitamin C in it and stuff. And, mm-hmm. and I spilled it on the carpet immediately. Right. And it was such a sad thing. You know, here they won't let me do that. So I have a Contigo. But it doesn't glow and it doesn't know.
I know.
This thing glows and it knows.
It glows and it knows. Yeah, there you go. You should send that to marketing.
I just bought it. I'm such a sucker. You're worse than Instagram, Alex. All right. Hydrate, spelled H-I-D-R-A-T-E, spark.com. Alex is going to do an Ask Me Anything in our Club Twit July 14th.
Yep.
Very excited about that. Nice. That's one of many things. We make Club Twit fun. You merely give us $7 a month, a couple of Starbucks, that's it. And we give you ad-free versions of all the shows, which shortens their length considerably. We give you access to our fabulous Discord, which is full of fun and games and animated GIFs and events. We had Stacey's book club the other day, and it was so much fun. I'm going to do that. We're voting right now on the next book. Interviews with interesting people coming up, a fireside chat on the 28th. And then of course the Twit Plus feed, which has stuff that doesn't make it to the podcast, including our Untitled Linux show, the Giz Fizz, the book club. We launch new shows there like This Week in Space, thanks to the generosity of our club members. We'd love to have you in the club. Would you join us? All you have to do is go to twit.tv/clubtwit. There's annual memberships as well as monthly, and there's corporate memberships there too. And Alex Lindsay will be there in a couple of weeks. I will not be here next week. What is going on next week? Do we know who's going to take over for me? Do we know how that's going to work? Is Micah going to be here? They've told me many times, but it's out. Too many cheese balls. I don't have any memory anymore. Anyway, it'll be a great show, and I will be back in 2 weeks. Alex Lindsay is at officehours.global every morning talking about cool stuff like...
Today we had data video on. They have built these little VPN things. A lot of us are doing remote production, and they built basically builds a VPN to a remote site. So you can have these little things, and it just does it on the web. A lot of us have had to build all this stuff, and you have to figure out how to set it all up. Just plug them into the internet once they're set up, and they basically feel like they're in the same place, and it lets us run all of our equipment on the other side. So you know, and it's really kind of what happens a lot in our group is that something bubbles up, you know, someone buys it, a whole bunch of people talk about it, and then we're like, well, let's bring them on and have them talk to us about it. And, nice. You know, someone's decided this is cool. And so it's a very, very democratic thing, you know, in the sense that members just start suggesting stuff and we throw it up there. So that was one of the things we're covering. But every day it's always something. We're always having a good time. Second hours and the first hours, just a lot of great questions and a lot of great answers. And I think we've pushed Zoom about as far as it can go. If you look at the thing, there's, you know, it's
quite a thing. It's really impressive what you've done with
this. A lot of fun.
Yeah, officehours.global, open to all. And of course, if you're looking to get Alex to host your next, not host, help stream your next event, although I'm sure Alex will be glad to host it too, 090.media is his day job. When are you going to be on WGBH next, Mr. Andy Anatko?
I'm off this week, but I'm going to be on again Thursday at 12:50. Go to wgbhnews.org to stream it live or later.
Thank you. And maybe we can get together when I'm out your way.
I hope so. I might even be broadcasting from the Boston Public Library.
Oh, if you're doing that, I'll come up on Thursday. That'd be fun. I'd love to see you do that.
I'll let you know. But yes, definitely.
Abby.
I will make time for you. Absolutely.
Aw, you sweetie. Renee Ritchie. YouTube.com/ yes, Renee Ritchie. He's the star. Also a Nebula broadcaster, nebula.app. What are you working on?
I just put up an M2 versus M1 Pro.
That's what I should
watch. A lot
of
people were confused about that.
That's what
I
should
watch. And I did a passkey versus passwords because people were super confused about how passkeys actually are implemented and how they're secured and all that. So I did a full explainer on all the aspects. Everything you possibly want to know and more about passkeys.
The world needs that.
Yes.
Thank you, Renee. We appreciate you being here. Micah Sargent will be in this seat next week
taking over the show for me. I will be back in 2 weeks. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Stop by and say hi. You can watch us do it live at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. Of course, there's also the Discord for members of the club. After the show's over, we put up a edited version at the website, twit.tv/MBW. We also put it on YouTube. There's a dedicated Mac Break Weekly channel. And you can subscribe because it is a podcast and get it automatically the minute it's available. I hope you will do one of those because we like it when you watch. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work because break time is over.
Is that an iPhone in your hand? Wait a second. Is that an Apple Watch on your wrist? And do I see an iPad sitting there on the table? Oh my goodness. You are the perfect person to be watching iOS Today, the show where Rosemary Orchard and I, Micah Sargent, talk all things iOS, tvOS, watchOS, HomePodOS. It's all the OSs that Apple has on offer, and we show you how to make the most of those gadgets. Just head to twit.tv/iOS to check it out.